Well, good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and you gators and grannies, to this Sunday's edition of The Big Puzzle. My name's Barry Prince, coming to you live from my kitchen up here in northern British Columbia. I'm being broadcast through shakeandwakeradio.com. I'm also being simulcast on the Truth Be Told radio networks. Thanks for joining us today, and as always, I always start the show off with a little plug for the people that are putting time and efforts into bringing these shows to you every week. Like I said, some months they have to actually fork money out of their own pocket for this, and that's all wrong. So if you can afford a coffee, I please ask you to do that for the people that are doing this for us and bringing this great shows to our networks. Always like to start my day off too with thanking my producer, because I always end up forgetting to do it at the end of the show. So thanks, Steve, for putting up with me every week. You're a blessing in my life, my friend. I have with me my very good friend Roger Landry for the first hour. You know, Roger is a regular on my show. Every 2 weeks we manage to get together and talk about what's going on in our various communities and our countries. And he's down there in the United States of America, and I'm up here in Canada. Roger, always good to have you in. And I'm going to start the day with what I told you I was going to start the day with, and that's your pet peeve of the week. Welcome back, my friend.
My pet peeve of the week. First off, I want to say hello to Annie. I want to say hello to Shake and Wake Radio. I was actually doing shows on Shake and Wake 8, 9 years ago, a long time ago. And it's very, very nice to see that she's still got it up and running and around. And I'm very proud of the lady and all of the networks that support the great work you do, Barry. And especially Steve, who puts up with us, especially me, screaming at everybody every other week. My pet peeve for the week? My pet peeve for the week is this, okay? If governments across the planet are not awakened to the fact that a big bunch of us are pissed off, then they're idiots and they do not deserve to be running anything, never mind a government. It doesn't matter what country you go to today, because they were all locked down. They were all forced to take vaccinations. They were all. This is a global issue. And the uprising is spreading, gee, like a bad virus. Maybe there's a vaccine for that.
I imagine they've got one already put away for that, Roger. They're panicking right now. You're absolutely correct, though. We see it right around the world right now. Countries pulling back the strings, and they're realizing that the cat's out of the bag and that they don't have any data now to support what they're doing, and people are starting to really wake up to it. It's a good time to be alive, because we've been waiting for this, Roger.
I want to continue that with this point. Last week I did an hour, and I do an hour show. I have my own show each week, and I did an hour on Canada, which, again, I don't think a lot about Canada. It's not that I think bad things. It's not that I think good things. It's just that I, like most Americans, don't really ever think about Canada. I got to tell you something right now. Canada's on the lips of just about everybody in America. Canada's on the lips of just about everybody in Australia. Canada's on the lips about just about everybody in New Zealand, everybody in the UK, everybody in the European Union. Would you like me to go on right now? More people know about Canada than in the history of Canada. We're talking about a country with 36 million people, which is a whole lot less than there is in the state of California alone, which right now commands the center spot on the globe. Why? Because they have set a precedent that is allowing a vast majority of those who were sleeping to not only wake up, but to wake up in a very angry fashion. And it has been needed, and it is welcome.
It's overdue. You know what, Roger? I'm gonna say something here, and I didn't think I'd ever be able to say this live on the air, folks. But I got to tell you, Roger, I love Justin Trudeau. I've never loved anybody
okay,
more in my
life.
You
didn't tell me this was a comedy special.
Because, Roger, no single individual in the history of Canada has done more to unite the Canadian people in the last 3 weeks than this clown in Ottawa has come out of his mouth, is infuriated Canadians. It's got Canadians to a point now where they cannot deny that something very, very nefarious is going on in our government, that this is nothing to do with a virus. And they're waking up by not the thousands, not the tens of thousands, but millions of Canadians are now waking up, and it's not going to get put back in the bottle, Roger. They're not going to be able to stop this. So watch out for the false flag. We talked about that before. It's something I think about every day. Go ahead, my friend.
Anybody who thinks that this is going to be allowed to happen without any pushback from the elitists, you need to understand something. These elitists control the ebb and flow of money across the entire planet. These people control the ebb and flow of leaders across the entire planet. The amount of people in positions of authority or supposedly respectability across the planet who owe them in one fashion or another, whether they actually know it or not, is astronomical. If you take a look at Joe Bob, let me explain something very, very quickly and very easily. Joe Bob was, I don't know, hide in your basement Joe Bob. When Joe Bob was running for president, he had trouble filling up a high school auditorium that seats about 1,000 people. He was lucky if he had 400 or 500 people in there, and they were all social distance and wearing masks. That was his excuse for having so little people. At the same time, Donald Trump down the street had 30,000 to 50,000 people with about 2,000 or 3,000 outside listening on their radios because they couldn't get in due to the overflow. Yet this guy, Sleepy Joe Biden, gained the most votes ever gained in history to become the president of the United States. Nobody believes that. Nobody does. But if you are the elites, you need what they needed was they needed to make sure that Joe Bob got in there. Why did they need to make sure Joe Bob got in there? Because the 4 years before that, while Trump was in there, their entire scenario was pretty much in park. All of what we're seeing now should have happened 5 years ago in America, but it didn't because of some red skin, or I don't know, dark orange skin dude named Trump. So they had to make sure beyond a shadow of a doubt that they had the biggest puppet the world had ever seen sitting in the White House in order to make everything that they wanted, everything they had planned for, everything that was already choreographed happen. Now, Trudeau fits the same damn billet, or should I say Castro's son fits the same damn billet. Okay, if you go to one nation after, let's go to the United Kingdom. I got to tell you something. Mister, I never combed my hair in my life. Yeah, in the UK, he's just as big an idiot as Trudeau is. And I could go on and on. If you stop and look at the leaders of our countries today, how the hell did any of these people get elected? They actually didn't. They were put in place by those who control the ebb and flow of power and money across the planet to accomplish what they're trying to accomplish right now. If you remember several weeks ago, and then several months ago, and then about a year and a half ago, I said on your show that people are slow to wake up, but when they do and they get angry, there's a hell of a lot of us. Right now, we are starting to see the tidal wave rising. If you think for one second that they're not going to do something to push back against this, you're absolutely wrong. There won't be one false flag. There'll be false flags across the planet.
Yeah. Or one major event, Roger, that would rally the whole planet around one enemy. We know they've done that before, and that's in their playbook. And that's something I think about every day right now. They're getting desperate that they're a wounded animal. They literally are a wounded animal right now, and their backs are up against the wall. They know they're losing the narrative. Like you said, the data's coming out, and I've been looking at data here, Roger. It just absolutely astounds me what I'm actually seeing right now. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that nothing they have done is working. Nothing. This whole program with the jibby jabs is a complete failure, but it's done exactly what they wanted it to do, and that's divide society.
If you wanted to accomplish, which is exactly what I believe and a lot of other people with half a brain even believe, if you wanted to accomplish the takeover of global governance by a few elitists, global governance, great reset, whatever the hell you want to call it, okay, new world order. If you wanted to accomplish that, you need to accomplish two things. The first thing you need to accomplish is you need a global panic, something that covers the entire globe simultaneously. You need to have everybody at a very high level of fear. Then you need to step in with the cure or something that will negate a vast majority of the oops that's going to happen to them so they can at least live a semi-normal life. We have that. They have that. That's called a pandemic based on something that doesn't even have the veracity of a bad flu year, and a vaccine, which isn't a vaccine, because a vaccine, in order to qualify, of course, they've changed the definition, isn't that nice, but for the last 100 years, a vaccine was something that made your body immune. It was something that built antibodies into your system so that if a virus came in, a known virus, they could send out troops to kill it. But that meant that if the virus was killed, your body couldn't store it. And if your body couldn't store it, you couldn't transmit it. We are looking at something that the CDC and the manufacturers of this mechanism, because you can't call it a vaccine, have admitted it cannot keep you from getting COVID. It cannot keep your body from storing COVID. It cannot keep you from transmitting COVID. What the hell are you taking it for? I'm going to tell you what you're taking it for. And I've said this on your show before, Barry. It's never intended and never was intended to save you from anything. It was intended to give you something. And that's called the spike protein. If you take a look, you are being coerced and threatened into taking the most dangerous pharmaceutical agent ever utilized on mass humanity in the history of pharmaceuticals. If you take a look at this vaccine that doesn't work at all by the definition of a vaccine, not even a little bit, if you take a look at this and you take a look at the actual numbers, not what's been, I mean, what's been hidden, not what they've been telling us. If you take a look at the numbers, what you need to understand is they have accomplished a lot of what they are attempting to do. What most people don't understand is there have been probably close to 3 billion people that have been vaccinated once, twice, and some of them even had their boosters. How many of these are transmission platforms? And what is the long-term fallout of this anti or faux vaccine? What is it? Is it going to be massive sterility? I know what it's going to do to a lot of people. The first time you take it, the spike protein literally wreaks havoc on your immune system. And if you're a woman, it tends to, I don't know, congregate in the ovaries. Yep, sterility. So now what you've got is sterilizing women. Yeah, doesn't matter how fertile the men are. If you ain't got no women, you ain't got no babies. The next thing it does is it knocks your immune system to the ground. It goes to your heart. It goes to every organ in your body. And it also absolutely wreaks havoc on the blood cells and the production of blood cells. So now what you've got is everybody who has been vaccinated or everybody who lives with somebody who's been vaccinated, so via the mechanism of transmission, they get a vaccine. It knocks their immune system to the ground. It starts to wear off after a couple of months, so you have to get a second one. It goes in and does a little bit more damage, as much as the first one did and a little bit more. Then you go and get a booster. And it does a little bit more than the last two did. By the time you get your first booster, your immune system is at the mercy of anything and everything, which means 2 to 3 years from now, we're going to have people across the damn planet dying from the measles, the mumps, the flu, a cold. And this is an absolute fact. And why are they dying? Because this mechanism called the vaccine has literally annihilated their immune system.
What a weapon, Ace, Roger. Unbelievable what they're doing.
Bio.
Get a load of this, Roger. This came out of Bonnie Henry, our so-called health official in British Columbia. And I think this was a slip-up because I don't think she was supposed to word this the way she did. But she said, we're talking about the booster shot and why it's so necessary. Because she said, this came right out of her mouth, and I had to go back and listen to it again, that we're finding out that the vaccinations diminish your immune ability in your body, so it's necessary that you take the booster to keep your immune levels up. And this, and I'm sitting there, I'm going, did I just hear what I thought I heard? Yes. They're admitting to the public that these vaccinations are having an effect on your natural immunity of your body. What you just talked about, Roger, the attack on the immune system, the effects we're going to see a couple years down the road are just going to boggle society. But of course, the government's going to come along and say, hey, we've got the newest variant, and here's the newest booster to protect you. Go ahead.
Unless what people need to understand is, again, they tend to lessen in their strength a little bit each time. So what you may have is you need, or you will be required to take continuous boosters in order to have any type of an immune system at all, even one that is bolstered artificially via the mechanisms of the booster shots. Or at least they may tell you that. What we are going to see going forward is a massive increase in cancers, a massive increase in viral deaths, a massive increase in respiratory deaths, and these will not be blamed on the shot. They will be blamed on new variants. They will be blamed on other things that were released. They will be blamed on because they literally are not COVID. They aren't. And anybody who thinks that COVID doesn't exist, COVID has existed for a long time. It's called the flu. SARS-CoV viruses have been around for a long time. The difference between those and this one is its ability to sterilize, its ability to form blood clots, its ability, and this was all done via man's hands. It's called gain of function. Fauci and his boys over in the lab that I believe is owned by one of the pharmaceutical companies in Wuhan, what they did is they manufactured via gain of function something that doesn't go out and kill a whole lot of people. What it does do is it trips the life fantastic over time by slaughtering your immune system. And the more shots you get, the more you become, I don't know, liable to, like I said, dying from the flu, dying from a cold, dying from things that people normally would not die from. But myocarditis, you're going to see a massive increase in that. People don't understand that what we have seen today is one of the biggest death rates for any vaccine ever. It's literally 10 times more deadly than every vaccine in the history of vaccine, all combined. Times 10, and it still doesn't really measure up. What we are looking at here is a system whereby over the next 5 to 10 years, and some doctors are saying could start in less than 2 years, we are looking at a massive increase in illness across the entire planet. These people who haven't been vaccinated now, why after 2 years haven't they gotten vaccinated? Because they did their research. Because they listened to a show like yours, Barry. Because they listened to a show like mine. Because they went out and did their research because they thought we were nuts at first. And they said, I got to check on this myself. And they found out we weren't nuts. So what we've got is a lot of people across the planet that are scared right now and angry right now because they're starting to see that the numbers being hidden from us, the actual deaths, the actual sicknesses being caused by these vaccines is magnitudes above what they're allowing you to know. And it's getting worse by the day. It's getting exponentially worse.
Yeah, and what pisses me off the most is what they're doing to our children, Roger. Above everything that these people are doing to us right now in our society, what they're doing to our children, buddy, that cuts me right to the heart, that these people know they're harming the most innocent people in our world. They're doing it, and they know it, and I'm telling you, Roger, I'd like to get my hands on them, buddy, because this is beyond evil. Why they're doing this to our children, that's a huge rabbit hole. I'd like to get your thoughts on that for a couple minutes, but just the fact that they're injecting this stuff into our children, Roger, and you've looked at the numbers. I've looked at the numbers. I know what the numbers tell me about a child actually being affected by this, and the numbers are basically non-existent. There's no justification for what they're doing, and we're allowing this to go on. We need to stop that right now, Roger. How can we do that?
Well, let's talk about those numbers for a second. The chances of your child dying, and we're talking about anybody 16, 17 years old or younger, especially those that are 10 years old or younger, or now the ones that they want to vaccinate 5 years old, okay? What we're looking at is a death rate that is, I don't know, the survival rate of a child getting COVID-19 is about the same as the survival rate of a child getting the flu, which is approximately 99.998. In other words, 0.002% of our children are going to die. I got to explain something else to you. Those who do die are dying because they have comorbidities. Any child who has severe, two or more severe comorbidities and gets the flu stands a very good chance of dying. Okay? But let's stop and think about what else. I just got done saying that a lot of these spike proteins tend to find their way to a female's ovaries. So if you take the young generation, the up-and-coming generation, not the generation that's already had their kids. And nowadays, if you're in the 30s or 40s, most don't even want kids anymore. That's the way society has been trained to, you know what, I can do so much more if I don't have kids. Kids are a pain in the butt. Kids weigh me down. But if you've got the younger generation, the 17, 18-year-old and younger, and you sterilize them, what you have just done is you have taken the global population and dropped it off a freaking cliff. It's not a matter of killing these kids. It really isn't. These elitists have patience. They've been working on this since the 18th century, taking over the planet. These elitists have been working on this for hundreds of years, centuries. What are they looking at? Why do they insist that our children get these vaccines and these boosters? Because if you are going to have the biggest effect on the sterility or the fertility of this planet, you don't go after the old folk. You don't even have to go, you don't even go after the in-between folk. You go after the young folk. Because once you have sterilized the young folk, the rest of us, we're going to be dying off from, and I'm talking about the vaccinated or those who live with the vaccinated, they're going to be dying off from the flu. They're going to be dying off from heart attacks. They're going to be dying off from liver failure because of the spike proteins. So that's the mechanism of the spike protein that's intended for people like you and me, Barry. But sterilizing that young generation of children ensures a drastic drop in the global population.
Yeah, they're thinking a couple of years down the road, Roger. And like you said, we don't know. We have no idea what the long-term effects of these jibby jabs are going to be on the human
world. Wait. Hold on. Because what they said
what we're seeing now, Roger, but what are we going to see 2 years down the road?
I'm agreeing with you.
Well, I'm just saying, 2 years down the road, what are we really going to start seeing it happen in society? And how will they twist that around? There's a good one for you. We know how they're going to twist that around, Roger. It's another variant. Going to need another shot. It's never going to go away until they've killed us all. And that's not too far away, my friend. Go ahead.
Keep humanity under 500 million in tune with nature. These are the most arrogant people in the history of this planet, and it didn't start yesterday, okay? They telegraph what they are going to do. Anybody who's going to spend well over $1 million to put up a monument like the Georgia Guidestones, which is so blatant and in your face, is not somebody that you are figuring is trying to hide anything. They're not. What they are wondering is, who is smart enough to understand that? What most people fail to understand is that people like Barry and myself and a lot of other people that I run with and know and do research with, we are the people that they intend to see those, I don't know, those telegraphings of the future that they put out. The Georgia Guidestones, we're supposed to make sense of that. We're supposed to make sense of that, and we're supposed to tell people about it. And why are we supposed to tell people about it? For two reasons. One, the vast majority of the people out there are going to think we're conspiracy nuts, and they're not going to believe what we have to say. That's changing. But that's one of the reasons. The other reason is we identify ourselves. We tell these elites who may be smart enough to possibly, I don't know, put a stick in the spokes of their wheel as it spins. We identify ourselves. So it's not so much arrogance, although that's part of it, as much as it is identifying people like us who take the pieces of the puzzle and put them together and say, this is what the picture looks like. We have identified ourselves. Now, if there's only a couple of us, we're in serious danger. But if the entire globe has people waking up at an exponential rate on a daily basis, which is what I'm seeing today in Australia, what I'm seeing today in New Zealand, what I'm seeing today in the UK, what you can't help but miss in Canada and in the United States, then we are not so much alone anymore. And we don't stand out so much anymore. And the danger to us as individuals falls at an exponential rate as the increase of those who have knowledge of what's actually going on at an exponential rate. So this is what we're seeing right now. You and I are becoming safer by the day because there's more and more people who actually understand what the hell we're saying.
There's more people got our backs now, Roger, than a couple months ago. That's for sure.
And I told you this was going to happen. Do you remember on your show 6 months ago? I'll bet you even Steve is chuckling. I said the Americans are the slowest nation on the planet to wake up. But when they do, they don't wake up quiet and they do wake up angry. What we are seeing today is a groundswell. But I said, America, take it and apply it to the entire global population. This is what I expected. Everybody laughed when I said this. They said, no, these people are going to go down without a whimper. No, they are going to do much more than whimper, let me tell you.
Well, it's funny how it took something like a truck convoy to wake people up, Roger, but it's absolutely amazing to see what's happening. Yeah. It is.
Canada will go down in history as the impetus for the pushback against the elites.
Absolutely. Our little convoys here yesterday, Roger, I'm not kidding you. I was involved in it yesterday. And there was, I got to say that, you know, I was out the one before. We did a drive up to Kitimat yesterday. I'm not kidding you when I say I think there was at least two times as many vehicles out yesterday as the week before. And people I was talking to yesterday, a lot of them said to me, Roger, you know what, that we really weren't aware of some of the things that were going on in our government for the last couple of years until the last couple, 3 weeks where the truckers have come forward and that information is being put out. The doctors are getting their information out. We had an open challenge to the Canadian so-called health officials and their doctors to sit in a panel. And the good thing about it, Roger, it was caught on national TV. So the challenge was made on national TV for the government to bring forward their health officials so they could justify to the Canadian public exactly the mandates and the restrictions they're enforcing on society. And, of course, they didn't show up. There were three doctors, very, very well-known very, very well-known doctors waiting to debate this openly with the government. Of course, they wouldn't show up. But the good thing about it, it was caught on CBC, and they put that out. And that alone has got people scratching their heads. If the government is so absolutely sold on this, and they're telling us every time they get in front of the microphone that it's safe and effective, come and have a debate so the Canadian people can decide for themselves. And of course, it's just like our prime minister, they have no courage to do that. But Canadian people are catching it, Roger. They really are.
So
it's a good thing, my friend.
I would tell you that Justin Trudeau has the newest, COVID-19 variant. It's called Coward 19.
Yeah, and he's got a new burger at McDonald's. It's called the chicken burger.
Yeah. Look, I would tell you that prior to the trucker convoy, there was a majority of Canadians that still believed people like us were nuts. They did. They may have been hemming and hawing a little bit, but they always were going to err to the side of caution. After the convoy and after the commencement of the convoy and over the last couple of weeks, they initially saw a 15-point swing from those who didn't believe or didn't want to think that way to those who did. I believe that's up to almost 22% now. What we are looking at in Canada is a solid majority that are thinking people like Justin Trudeau are an absolute traitor to their country.
It's also, Roger, it's opened up what I'm seeing happen in Canada is that people, when they all of a sudden start to realize just how badly they've been scammed, how badly the unsuspecting Canadian public was preyed on by these very evil people. It's really hard for, I'm finding this in conversations with people, that it's really hard for them to swallow that red pill, to actually look themselves in the mirror and say, hey, my government is working against me, that they're evil, and what they're trying to do is completely unjustified and is taking away all our rights and freedoms. They get to that point. It's a trigger point. And all of a sudden they go, yeah. And all of a sudden, of course, the anger comes. And that's what we're seeing. But what I'm also seeing is people are telling me now that they are sitting down at the table and actually coming to tears talking to their relatives about what is actually going on. So we're seeing people open their hearts, Roger. And that is contagious, my friend. Go ahead.
I'm going to give you the 10 points of destroying a country. Okay? If you wanted to destroy a country, these are the 10 points. And this is part of my last show, but not all of it. And I would like to share this. All right? First thing you would do is destroy social harmony. In the United States, we saw BLM and Antifa burning and destroying and looting mainstream America with total impunity, while local police were demonized and defunded, leaving citizens in increasingly dangerous positions, all in the name of eliminating racism and white supremacy. So you destroy harmony. That's the first one. The second one is you destroy the system of education. Okay, you teach critical race theory. You tell students that they don't need anything. You're never going to get anything below a C. You tell students they don't have to learn math because that's racist. And what you actually do is you lower the ability of an entire nation to compete globally. So first one, destroy social harmony. Second one, destroy the educational system. Third one, destroy the economic backbone. You tie people to their homes so that 80% in some cases of most nations, their gross national product comes from the mom and pop business, like America. We have a massive economy, but 80% of that economy and a lot of the Canadian economy is based on the mom and pop, the family-owned business, the small business. But if you lock people down in their homes and you tell them the only place you can go to get food, the only place you can go to replace your shoes, the only place you can go to get oil for your car is the big box stores, and everybody else goes under. What you are doing is literally destroying the backbone of the economy. That's number three. Number four, you destroy the supply chain. What you do is you make sure the ships can't unload. What you make sure is that the truckers, due to mandates, can't deliver stuff. What you do is you make sure that the businesses that are relied on to stay open, such as warehouses, so on and so forth, closed down. What's number five? You destroy faith in government. Unconstitutional mandates, unconstitutional voting laws, spying on citizens, proclaiming parents to be domestic terrorists for concerns about their children, out of control corrupt spending triggering runaway inflation, leaders that don't represent we the people in any nation and don't really give a damn about us. That's number five. Number six, you destroy its faith in government. Unconstitutional mandates, so on and so forth. The next thing you do is you destroy its health care system. Unconstitutional mandates for health care workers who are fully aware of the tyranny and personal risks being forced on them. It's like playing Russian roulette, and they don't want to do it, so they lose their jobs. You have lack of trust in doctors who keep safe medications away from them and only prescribe the medications that they know will do harm. You got to take a vaccine. Don't even ask me about ivermectin. Don't even ask me about hydroxychloroquine. Don't even ask me. So now you've destroyed the health care system. Then you destroyed national security. You allow open borders facilitating illegal aliens in the millions that prevail as a mechanism to shift the voting majority, as well as unvetted aliens coming across the border and being literally sent in the heat of night on planes to your town, and you're not being told about it. How many of them are terrorists? How many of them are gangsters? How many of them are drug dealers? Okay, the next thing you do, we're on number eight, is destroy its global standing. In America, severely damaging our credibility with key allies via unilateral actions that increase the risk to our allies while decreasing our trust factor. Geez, how about the withdrawal from Afghanistan? Need I go further? Number nine, destroy its military, and this goes for Canada as well, mandating vaccines that will either decimate the ranks via health failures and or death, or by a vast number of those in the military saying, I'm not going to comply. I'm not going to play Russian roulette, and walking away from the military. Number 10, destroy all hopes for the future. Take all of the above that I just stated. And again, this isn't everything. These are just the ones that are in our face right now. And multiply all of them by a factor of, are you freaking kidding me? And what you end up with is a large portion of said population basically losing all hope for any kind of a future for themselves and their children. That includes either freedom or liberty. What do you see happening around you right now? I'm going to read them off real quick, just the titles. Number one, destroy social harmony. Number two, destroy the system of education. Number three, destroy the economic backbone. Number four, destroy the supply chain. Number five, destroy faith in government. Number six, destroy the healthcare system. Number seven, destroy national security. Number eight, destroy global standing. Number nine, destroy military. Number 10, destroy hope in the future. Now, let me ask you a question, and I don't care what country you're listening to this from. How much of this isn't happening in your country right now? And now you tell me it's not choreographed. It is.
They didn't do it overnight, Roger. This has been going on for many, many years.
For 60 years they've been planning on this.
Well, they can't do it overnight, Roger. You can't make catastrophic changes in society in a very short period of time, or society would recognize it. But what these people have done is they've taken a little piece here, a little piece there, a little piece here, a little piece there. Society doesn't recognize it, and boom, here we are today in a mess that is going to take a massive effort from everybody listening to this show right now to correct. But we don't have a choice, buddy. We don't. Go ahead.
There's one other thing that they did count on that most people didn't think about. And you got to remember, again, I'll go back, what did Roger do for well over 30 years, closer to 40, but we'll say well over 30 years. He worked for the military-industrial complex or the military itself. Roger was aware of technology when he worked for the military-industrial complex that you actually didn't see out in the real world for 10, 15, 20 years after it was already a capability within the deep, dark dredges of the military. So what you are looking at is an elite caste that was aware of where technology was going, was aware of how technology would speed up all of these mechanisms. In the 1800s, when they started to pull this crap across the planet, you needed to send somebody, okay, or the late 1700s, in a ship all the way across the Atlantic Ocean just to get a message to somebody in Washington, D.C. It took months. Now you pull out your cell phone, you go beep, 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 done. It's done. These people were aware of technological advances far before anybody sitting out in JQ Public were. They knew that the tyranny could be multiplied exponentially once the technology started to fit into their agenda. We are looking at instantaneous what? We're looking at instantaneous communication. We are looking at technology that is so far above even the end of World War II, it's insane. When they started to make plans for this right after World War II, they counted on an exponential growth in technological capability. How many of you out there are even thinking about this? You didn't do what Roger did for a living for well over 30 years. I'm thinking about it. I'm well aware of it. And I was telling you guys, stop and think about this, Mary. I did this on your show. I was telling you guys that 5G, because it was a high enough frequency that it required a lot of antennas and transmitters, could form a phased array. And that a phased array could be used with all of the aluminum that's raining down on you. It gets put into your brain. They could use 5G and a phased array or a steerable beam to literally fry you. All they needed to do was be able to identify you. The cell phones were the rough way of doing that. You have a cell phone. They can identify you. They can steer a beam towards you, heat your brain up just a little bit. Your brain shuts down. You die. They shut the beam off. Your brain goes back to the normal temperature, which is only a few degrees, and nobody ever knows what killed you. But now they can inject you with, listen to me, graphene oxide and other things. They can inject you with a chip small enough to identify you. Let's talk about the technology. Why was 5G being built out by the military while you and I were locked into our homes in lockdown? Why was 5G being built out in a massive fashion by the military, especially in the larger cities where you had the biggest population? If you want to start destroying the population, you start in the big cities. Look, I also said on your show at least a year and a half ago, if you take the 5G build out and superimpose it over where you have the highest level of supposed COVID deaths, you're going to find out they're almost identical. Do you remember me saying this, Barry?
I do, Roger. And, you know, I looked at these charts just a couple of weeks ago. There's information on the internet, and you know this, and I know this, folks, that you can go find out every country and how many 5G towers they've rolled out and where the masses of those towers are in those countries. And you tell me, Roger, but if you look at the COVID hotspots around the planet, they're identical. They're absolutely identical. This. So explain that to people, Roger. Why is that? It's just a coincidence.
I've been saying this for years because of what I did for a living. I knew that the technology, the 5G build out, we know that 5G is detrimental to our health. Scientists across the planet know it. As a matter of fact, there are some countries that have absolutely banned 5G, but they're not significant in the scheme of things. Countries like the United States, we can protest all we want. There's enough money, okay, in our leaders' pockets due to the elites who control this, that 5G build-out is going to continue, and it has continued. What we are looking at here is microwave technology. What's a steerable beam? If you have enough antennas, which you need with 5G, you can literally pinpoint a microwave beam on any source you can identify. It's either by a chip that goes into you via a shot, a vaccine you're required to take, or the cell phone you carry. Now, anybody who thinks that I'm crazy, I'm absolutely not. You tell me why, and Barry said, and what I've said is absolutely true. This has been planned on for years. How many years have you been looking up in the sky on a daily basis and seeing stream after stream after stream of absolutely unnatural lines in the sky? The biggest byproduct of that is nano-sized particles of aluminum. You breathe them, you drink them in your water, you eat them in your food, they go up through the roots of the plants, into your food, so on and so forth. The people who are dying, and I said this on your show over a year ago, the people who are dying of Alzheimer's disease, they did brain biopsies. They took their brains, opened them up, sliced very thin slices, put them under a microscope, and what they found was an inordinately large amount of nano-sized particles of aluminum in their brain. Aluminum does two things. One, it is very toxic. It will destroy brain cells. The second thing it will do, you ever put an aluminum fork in a microwave and turned it on? Mm. Now, does that make a little bit more sense to everybody?
Talking about mass genocide, Roger. They're spraying us like rats. The whole planet's being sprayed. Our children, our food, our animals, everything that we do, touch, and breathe is being affected by this. Barium, strontium, potassium, iodide, mercury, and, of course, aluminum going into our bodies, into our plants. We can't escape it. What kind of effect is this having on our children? Do people really care? We're being sprayed like rats, and people are just going, well, the problem is they've got their heads down on their phones, Roger. They can't see what's going on above their heads.
In 2014, there was about a 300,000 birth deficit in the United States. I said 2014. That was, 8 years ago? How many do you think it is today? I'll bet you it's close to 500,000 birth deficits in the United States. You're not going to hear about that. You're not going to hear about it. But it's absolutely true. When you've got 500,000 on average less children being born in a country, what you are doing is you're going down a slope to a point where, and we in the United States are almost at that point, where we can no longer support the level of our how many people are in our country, our population, which means there won't be enough people to do the work. There won't be enough people to support the infrastructure. There won't be enough people. And this is happening more and more rapidly as we go along. Why is it happening? Barry just explained it to you, and there's a few more things. Vaccines are one of the biggest issues. Anybody who doesn't understand, the United States is the most vaccinated nation in the planet long before COVID. We get vaccinated more than any other nation on the planet. Here's a really scary thing for you. Vaccines have been tied to autism for over 20 years. In the 1950s, the occurrence of autism in American children was told to exceed, could exceed, 1 in 50,000 children. Today, the occurrence of autism in our children, our male children, is told to be approximately 1 in 20. What I just told you was in less than 70 years, the levels of autism have increased from over 1 in 50,000 to 1 in 20. If that doesn't make you go, what? You're a freaking idiot.
Those numbers just baffle me, Roger, and that's happening in our society. What are they telling us? In another 5 or 6 years, it'll be 1 in 2 children are born? Do people realize the social impact that's going to have on our society?
It's already having a social impact.
Well, yeah, but you're talking about parents that are going to be having to look after that child for the life of that child until they pass away, and then it'll, of course, become a ward of the state. What kind of life is that for children to have, Roger? But that's happening right now. And tell me it's a coincidence, buddy. We've talked about vaccines so many times, Roger, over the years. Yep. And everything that you've talked about, I absolutely agree with it because I've looked at the numbers myself. People don't look at numbers, unfortunately. But that stat alone, if that doesn't shock people to death, I don't know what to say. We're heading towards a society that is absolutely one that I wouldn't want my children to be living in. But you know what, Roger? It can be stopped still now. There's things that they're learning now that will reverse autism, all kinds of stuff coming out. It's not a lost cause, but it's got to come to a stop. If you look at the graph of increase in vaccines, folks, that has happened to our children since Rogers talked in the 50s and 60s, and you look at the amount of vaccinations they're getting today as opposed to then, you take the chart and lay them over top of each other, the rise in autism, and it's almost identical. So tell me that's just another coincidence in our society, Roger. We're going to have to write a book, you know, buddy, coincidences, because there is so many of them. Go ahead.
If you remember, and there'll be an article on the Liberty Beacon tomorrow with those 10 points in it. If you remember the 10 points I just gave you, how do you destroy a nation? Okay, let me explain something to you. There are two mechanisms, and I believe I've told you all this, but we're getting close to the end of the show. I want this to be a sticking point in your head. There are two mechanisms that are required to control a global population. The first one is you need something that scares the living hell out of a vast majority. And when I say vast, I'm talking 95% or more of the entire global population. You need something that strikes fear into the hearts of a massive majority of humanity. The second thing you need is a promise of help, a promise of a cure, a promise of something that will make life at least somewhat better for you. Okay? You need those two things in order to accomplish what we've been talking about today. The first one is called COVID-19. It has affected every single nation on the planet. The second thing is a vaccine. It has damn near destroyed the economies of almost every single nation across the entire planet. How many shots had to be fired? How many nuclear missiles were launched? How many battleships got sunk? How many planes got knocked out of the sky? How many troops did we have to bury because they got killed in the field, in the line of action? None! Not one single one! But yet, we are in the midst of World War III. Anybody who thinks Roger's exaggerating, I'm going to tell you something. The amount of people over the next 5 to 10 years, including the amount of people now, that will die as a result of this bioweapons attack on humanity will make every single war in the entire history of the planet combined times a factor of 100 seems small. You tell me we're not in the middle of World War III, and I'm going to call you a moron.
You know, Roger, the enemy is truly inside the gates, and Canadians, and like I said, the world is starting to recognize it. My only hopes are today that we can wrap this right up, because we need to make a stand in the sand right now that we can't let them go past. If we let this go on any longer, I'm in fear of them gaining so much power in our society that we won't be able to put a stop to it. We see governments making moves now that are absolute communistic. Same thing is happening in the States. This is happening in Canada. Some of the legislation that Justin Trudeau is ramming through right now, folks, while talking about communism 2.0, they want to be, and with the Liberals in Canada, unfortunately, our system between the Liberals and the NDPs that have 176 seats in our parliament gives them a majority ability to pass through any legislation they want without Canadian people having recourse. And what they're trying to do right now, Roger, is run through legislation that the government will be the only governing source in Canada that will license media. So in other words, folks, if they don't like what you're saying, you won't get a license. And little guys like me will be silenced. That's where they're going right now, Roger. And that's just one of the many things they're doing. It is so in our face. Go ahead, bud.
I would tell you that when Barry says we can still stand up, we can still make a difference, I absolutely agree with him. And here's the worst thing I'm going to say all day. I'm going to tell you right now that we're at about 8 billion people on this planet. I'm going to tell you that in probably an average of 7 years from now, half of this population is going to be dead just as a result of what's happening today. If you think the mandates have stopped, they haven't. If you think people taking vaccines, although it may not be as many today, there's still more taking vaccines. I will tell you that at least 4 billion people will be vaccinated. I will tell you that those people, a vast majority of them, will either die off, not necessarily from the vaccine, but from causality from the vaccine, and the others will be from living with them, having those properties transmitted to them. I am telling you that if we don't step up right now, I already see half of the global population going away. I already see that happening. If we are going to minimize that, we need to start working on it yesterday, not tomorrow.
You're absolutely correct. I just got some news coming through to me here, Roger, that apparently Antifa are out in full force today in Ottawa and are wreaking havoc right now. So I'm trying to follow the links on that, but they're being silenced. One guy had a live feed going, and they just took it down. So it's all out attack, I believe. They're really going to try and demonize this movement, if this is true. So anyways, I just wanted to say that real quick because it just came to my attention. But nothing's out of their playbook right now. You know that. We've said it a couple times in this show, Roger, that they're getting desperate. And I honestly believe that they are. Like you said, the data's coming out. People are really getting on what's been going on. You're seeing a major rise in anger in people. We just got to channel that anger in the right direction, Roger. I think that's the biggest thing we can do right now for people. I got to thank you for coming in, buddy. The hour is up. You always stimulate a great conversation, Roger. You're one of my favorite people to talk with. And I'll be 2 weeks and we'll have you back. And I'll get you to share a last thought before I have to let you go.
My last thought is there aren't too many places you can talk about this. Okay, you can talk, you can listen to this show, you can listen to the show I do, you can go to the Liberty Beacon Project, but at the same time, you can go to TLB Talk. You can form a group, you can bring your friends, and you can have discussions that you know are necessary for the mitigation of the evils going on around you. TLBTalk.com. We ain't in it for the money, because we have no corporate sponsors at all. If you don't drop $5 in the bucket on the way in, eventually we'll have to close the door. But that's the way it's going to be. Listen to me. You have to go somewhere and talk. If it's not TLBTalk.com, I don't care where it is. But you need to talk. If you don't, consider yourself as guilty as those who are perpetrating this.
Well said, Roger. Thanks for coming in, buddy. And we'll talk to you again in a couple weeks.
Absolutely. Thank you, Barry. It's always a pleasure. And thank you, Steve, for putting up with my screaming. He does the board.
We're used to it, Roger. Okay. We'll be back, folks, in a couple, 3 minutes with Wayne Peters. He's got lots to talk about right now in Canada and the convoys and stuff that's absolutely going nuts in our country. So back in a few minutes with Wayne. Hang around. Should be good.
When you're up on the mountain, you've got peace of mind like you've never known. But things change when you're down in the valley.
Welcome back, second hour, folks, and always thanks, Roger, for coming in. Always brings good information, and like I said, I'll have him back in a couple of weeks. Second hour is just as good because I've got Wayne Peters back in for a conversation. I don't think I've had Wayne on for about 3 weeks now, but in that last 3 weeks, a lot of things have happened in Canada, and always good to have Wayne back in. I'm going to start the conversation with what I always like to start with Wayne, and that's his pet peeve of the week. Welcome back, Wayne Peters.
Well, thanks for having me again. I keep waiting for your audience to get tired of me babbling and my pet peeves, but it doesn't seem to be happening. Here we go again. So to start with your pet peeve, you know, I had to think about this a little bit. And a bunch of my little pet peeves were kind of all rolled up into one when I got to thinking about it. You know, we've been fighting for a long time to be heard. We've been a part of or watched now thousands of different groups and people try to do something to get noticed, to get the discussions Canadians needed to have or felt we needed to have onto the table. And now we've actually got an uprising and a peaceful resistance in mass to this government. And everybody that's been crying for the last 2 years is crying again now. You know, I don't know if it's jealousy or, you know, this deep-seated jadedness that we've got. But this is kind of really starting to take a lot of work for me to try and pacify these people that feel entitled to be at the leading front of this movement instead of just being happy that it's happening. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of people that feel that they seem to, that they should be the center of attention, and they're not. And so there's this huge amount of energy being spent trying to discredit this person, that person. You know, instead of just looking at what they're doing right, they're looking for something that they can find fault in. And meanwhile, most of these people really haven't had an impact, but they're the ones screaming and crying the loudest. So this has kind of been my pet peeve of the week. Yep. You know, and the side note of that is we're kind of the creators of this situation. Over the last couple of years, I've seen a lot of people that were Pied Pipers, not in this for the right reasons. And typically as conservatives, we just tend to shake our heads and walk away because we believe in freedom. We believe in the freedom for people to be asshats if they want. Excuse my French. I won't go any further than that on your show, but you know what I mean. We believe in letting people be dummies if they want to be dummies. But the problem with allowing them to be these dummies is they've been not silenced. They have grown in volume, and now we have entities like the Legacy Media screaming and painting a broad brush over the entire movement because of people that weren't in it for the right reason right from the beginning. So we let these people do what they were going to do, and now those people tend to become the poster children for what's really happening, and that's unfair to what's really happening. So that's kind of my pet peeve of the week. We are not organized in this as much as we felt that we were, and our own inactions has created a problem for us.
I think you're going to see that anytime a movement like this starts, when people jumping on for all the right reasons, and I'm seeing a lot of that. How we put a stop to that, that's a good question. But if you were a government agency and you wanted to discredit this movement, you would be doing exactly what seems to be going on right now on the inner workings of the movement, that people are getting in there with all the wrong ideas and the wrong reasons for being there, and they're hijacking it and trying to discredit it. I keep getting links here. I'm going to have to find out if it's true or not, but apparently Antifa is in Ottawa today, and they're raising a little bit of heck, and it's come to me three times now. Have you heard anything about that? This apparently just started a little while ago, but I keep hearing about it.
One person
over in Shake and Wake, and I just got another feed here on Facebook saying something about it.
I did just finish watching just minutes ago a group of, 200 or 300 Antifa marching up Bank Street in Ottawa heading towards the convoy with the typical Antifa chant, our city, our streets. And far be it from these radical lefties to pass up on a righteous party. That's what they live for, is to go and cast shadows and sticks and stones at anybody that counters the Stasi narrative. So it's part and parcel. I'm surprised that they haven't been out sooner in mass. There's a few hundred of them, but you will see the typical Antifa dress, this typical stormtrooper intended appearance, the regular diet of union flags and Marxism flags and actually communist flags. And I find that kind of interesting that these people in control, I won't say in power, but people in control, they send out one of their flunkies with a Trudeau personal photographer in tow with one Nazi flag and one Union Jack flag, and now 100,000 people are instantly racist, but they will not address communist flags or Union flags flying with communist flags. This should have some concern for people, and I think at this point in time this is going to backfire on them. Optics are everything in this war, because this is an information and an optical war, and it's going to ultimately backfire on them. And I think we're seeing the last gasps of the mainstream legacy media in this point in time. They're committed to their masters.
Yes, they are, and they're desperate, and we see that way. More and more.
They see the writing on the wall. They can't help but see the writing on the wall. They have no choice at this point but to understand that when this regime collapses, so do they. Because they had already taken themselves out of the people's favor. They were not getting support. The government had to come in and basically provide every dollar that they need to stay operational. So these six corporations are directly – their lives are directly dependent on this regime. And when that regime collapses, you know what? You're going to have a lot more listeners, Barry.
We're going to have, Wayne, a lot of very, very pissed off people in Canada. When Canadians really start to get it, what we're seeing right now, Wayne, and a lot of people expressed this to me yesterday, that, they just kind of woke up here a little bit to what's going on in the country. Like, this convoy has done more to spark people to looking into actually what's going on in this country, than anything I've ever seen in the history of Canada. And it's a great thing. But what it's done to people all of a sudden aren't terrified to come out and speak against the government. A lot of people, I believe, the last year and a half, deep down inside, they know something really nefarious is going on in the country, but they've been going along to get along, got a family, got to do this, blah, blah, blah. But all of a sudden, now they're seeing millions of Canadians standing up. They're seeing them lining overpasses across the country. We're seeing a unification in the country that I have never seen before, Wayne, and it is about time. It really is. It's overdue. But I see it happening now, and I think we're past the tipping point. I really do. I don't think they're going to be able to put this genie back in the bottle. What do you think?
It's an interesting thing that you bring up there, and people may not actually realize the mechanics of this, but over the period of the last 2 years, or even a little longer than that, that things have been kind of starting to slide down the slippery slopes. People have tried to survive. They did what you said. You know, they tried to get along to get along, right? And what that inevitably does is, when people know things are wrong and they're forced to try to survive, their self-respect, bit by bit by bit, crumbles until there is nothing left. And what we are seeing now with this convoy is, people, bravery begets bravery. Bravery inspires bravery. And people have found their voice again, and with that, their self-respect. And now that is what the victory of this has been. More than anything, is millions of Canadians have got enough self-respect back to speak what is actually on their mind. And it is a far different message than what the government and legacy media would have people believe. There is absolutely no way that all of these people are unvaxxed. This has nothing to do with unvaxxed or vaxxed. This has to do with straight up freedom. Freedom is non-negotiable, and these clowns in office smashed people's self-respect so badly that it was almost impossible for them to pick themselves up again. But that Canadian spirit is being reborn in spades, and it's being reborn internationally. I've said this before, that in the history of our nation, it's a short history, we're a baby of a nation still, but every time Canadians stood up to evil in the world, the rest of the world stood with us. And since Canadians found their self-respect, decided to stand up for what's right, not what's easy, to stand up for what our nation stands for, the world has stood up as well. And I can promise you, the rest of the world, where people are standing up, they're not getting it as easily in this process as what Canadians are. Canadians are doing everything right in this at the moment. They've learned the lessons of what the mainstream media will do. They know the playbook of the government. They've got people helping them that understand all of this, and they have done such an amazingly brilliant job of not giving the regime what it so desperately needs: violence. They need us to behave like they project us to behave, and we are doing everything the opposite. And this has led to the worst flailing and feeble attempts by any government in the history of governments to try and pretend that they're the good guys. And throughout all of this, every one of these clowns, these foreign operatives, is what they really are, because they're not Canadian. They do not believe in Canadian law. They are globalists. They have sworn their oath to Herr Klaus, so they are no longer Canadians. They are actually foreign operatives, and they are being exposed every time they open their lips. So at this point, I just want them to keep talking. Keep talking, Trudeau. Keep talking, Ford. Keep talking, Watson. Keep talking slowly, because every step they make proves the Canadians correct and them false. Every step. Just like, you know, it saddens me that they were able to clear the Ambassador Bridge today. And peacefully, of course, because the Canadians didn't give them what they wanted. But that, I believe, was facilitated by the lineup of vets that stood between the police and the civilian demonstrators and said, no, 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 no. This is not how this goes. And at this point, the optics of this entire situation are beyond their control. They, you know, and the saddest part of this is it never even had to start. And ever since it did start, these politicians, these foreign operatives, they are masquerading as elected officials. This foreign cult of young Nazi leaders in the close World Economic Forum School of Young Leaders has managed to infiltrate almost the entire nation of Canada, and Canada is the prize. That is the prize for the globalists, because they know if they subdue Canada, the rest of the world will follow. So hashtag hold the line, Canada, because you are literally fighting to save the world again, and Canadians are leading the way, and people are following suit, and they've got it a lot worse in some other countries than we do here. But the thing of it is it is exposing this World Economic Forum regime for exactly what it is. And if you look at all of the countries that are having the worst problems with the destruction and decimation of human rights, of legal rights, the enforcement of Nazi policies and experimental stuff, every one of these leaders comes from the same Fourth Reich School of Economics and the Young Leaders Program, every one of them. And their disciples, every time they open up their mouths to try and prop up one of these foreign operatives, they expose themselves as well, just like Watson, just like Slowly, who used to wear a blue helmet, you know, those same blue helmets that were accused of raping and murdering people all over the world under the guise of being peacekeepers. That's where Slowly comes from, the police chief in Ottawa. So every time they open their mouths, their credibility gets more and more shot. So please keep talking.
Wayne, I'll tell you, I just love Justin Trudeau. I do. I just, nobody has single-handedly done as much in the last 3 weeks to wake Canadians up as he has. And every time he opens his mouth, he takes those pretty little socks and he shoves them down his throat. And it is so good to see, buddy, because people are finally really starting to get it. And they're starting to realize just how much trouble our country is. And now we're seeing a rise in the Canadian spirit. Like you said, I've been waiting for this. We've been waiting for this, Wayne. We've been banging our heads against the wall for the last couple of years here. A lot of people call us crazy. But all of a sudden, we're not so crazy. I'm not trying to be vindicated, neither are you. It's just a beautiful thing to see, finally, Canadians understanding just how much trouble our country is. And now we're seeing the rise in Canadian spirit that we haven't seen since the Second World War, Wayne, but it is so necessary right now. Go ahead.
You know, it's an interesting thing with the way that Canada is actually leading the world right now in all of this. Not only is it inspiring the world, but every gaffe, every foolish remark and ignorant comment that these globalists utter has a deep impact, and the repercussions, the waves of that reach far and wide. And absolutely, I think we really need a hashtag thank you Justin campaign going out there, because Justin Trudeau is single-handedly, through his hubris and arrogance, literally taking down the cabal himself with things that he's doing, like pressuring GoFundMe to seize it or to shut down the operations. But the interesting thing about that is not only did Justin Trudeau single-handedly robbed the Canadian convoy of almost $10 million, which, you know, that was where it started. It's gone through a few evolutions since then, but that's not where the story ends. With that, the story carries on in a different direction. Okay, people got their money back. They went to Give, Send, Go, and they've doubled made the same amount of money in a quarter of the time, and they're forcing the governments to declare states of emergency because they can't keep up with the righteous actions of the creative people that are in this for freedom. And freedom is non-negotiable. And Canadians, there is nobody better on earth than adapt, improvise, and overcome than Canadians in these hubris-ridden meat puppets. They just can't figure that out. So when Trudeau shuts down GoFundMe, he thinks that he's won a victory. Well, what ends up happening is now half of the states, their attorney generals are looking into the
question
of GoFundMe, because GoFundMe supports all of these super destructive, that have cost billions to America in their literally leveling of communities, blowing up of buildings, rape, murder, all of these things that have gone on endlessly, being funded by facilitated by GoFundMe to support organizations like Black Lives Matter. And now the Americans are going, wait a minute, the freedom guys are terrorists? You have to declare a state of emergency on this? I think we better need to do some investigating. So I think he can claim ultimately that Trudeau literally took down GoFundMe BLM by himself, or at the end of the day, that's what's going to happen. But it's creating this impact. What we're witnessing right now is not just a Canada thing. We are literally witnessing the World Economic Forum's Fourth Reich's worst case scenario, their worst possible case scenario. So now you've got Trudeau calling Uncle Biden saying, I'm sorry, please don't hurt me, Uncle Joe, or is it Uncle Brandon, whatever the case might be. And it's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out down there, because at every step they keep proving the population correct, and the Americans are paying attention. And I'm not talking about the card-carrying fascist Democrats. Not at all. Those aren't the ones that are watching. It's the silent majority. It is the millions of truckers. It is the working class individual who is watching. And I think they're in for the same rude awakening in America that our Canadian cabal is getting here. And it's just so it'll be interesting to see how the Super Bowl shakes out.
Yeah, there's something. I don't know if somebody said something about something there today, but it's just another one of those things that comes through the airways. But I really haven't paid attention. But it's, who's playing? I think it's Cincinnati and who else?
I don't know. I haven't got a clue.
Help me, Steve. Who's playing?
Truckers and politicians playing the hardest.
Well, anyway, Cincinnati, I guess, is the team that's not supposed to lose. And if they lose, I don't know. I just, so much crap coming through on the airwaves here. I don't pay attention to half of that, Wayne, but pretty comical, some of the things that are going on. But I keep hearing about what's going on in Ottawa here. It's coming through on my Facebook right now that apparently these guys are raising a little bit of hell. So I kind of like to know what's going on there right now. I got people coming in live from Ottawa in the next hour, so I'll definitely get a report on it, Wayne. I'll find out exactly what's going on. But you got to expect these guys. Well, you got to expect that at this point, because, like we said, Wayne, and people got to understand that they are now their backs are up against the wall, and they're a wounded animal. And you know, and I know the most dangerous thing in the world is a wounded animal that's got it back up against the wall. The government's there, folks, and they know it. So nothing is out of the playbook right now, Wayne. Nothing. Go ahead.
You're 100% correct, and you know, I've been face to face with these guys more times than I could count. I've watched how they operate. In endless occasions, and these guys aren't there to counter protest. They are there to agitate and to bait people into a violent interaction. And you're probably, when they arrive, you will see a disbursement of the police. The police will just magically disappear and then reappear after things get stupid. And this is unfortunately, I believe, a behind the doors setup. The law enforcement is struggling in itself. They are having severe manpower shortages, self-initiated, because the police forces are separated as well and divided as well, because a lot of them know they're not following the law. They're following a temporary regime. And it's these guys are being vilified and crucified. They're being hung out to dry, and the good cops are just not having any part of it. But unfortunately, it's very difficult for the people to differentiate that in the heat of the moment, or on, you know, boots on the ground level.
Yep.
And so there's this real danger that we run into about the misconceptions of what the officers are doing in these situations. And in Ottawa, I just heard about this new agency that I'd never heard of before, but it's like an armed wing of enforcement for the medical authority. Like, these aren't cops anymore. These are Stasi. So we have to find ways to respect the cops that are doing the right thing, and to not get caught up in the shenanigans of these hired enforcers for the World Economic Forum.
Yeah. What I say to those cops right now, Wayne, we need your voices loud and clear.
You know, it's every day I turn my notifications on, and there's more officers that are speaking up, you know. It's heartwarming, but it's also frightening knowing that these officers are so compelled that this is their last avenue to speak, is to do this, and they get in trouble for this. They are immediately under investigation once they have spoken in any way, shape, or form. But what I'm starting to see now is the military, the veterans, and that is a beautiful
thing.
I saw a gentleman today knowing that he was probably going to be disciplined and reprimanded, but after 20-plus years of service, he put on his official uniform with his crests and logos and said, no, this is wrong. I support, you know, the soldiers that fought for freedom with me, but I am officially making my statement and saying no, what the government is doing is wrong. And this guy is going to march from Victoria to Ottawa, and he's leaving on the 20th, and I'm hoping that I get a chance to march with him for a while when he starts passing through my neck of the woods, because that's powerful stuff. When the military is – the veterans are standing in harm's way again, and the veterans that have done their duty are standing up again, that is where our Canadian spirit lives, not in these rental thugs, that's for sure.
Maybe that'll be the straw that breaks the camel's back and get Canadians to fully wake up to what's going on in our country, because we do see a major awakening like I've never seen before, Wayne. It's really important right now that we just absolutely put our foot to the floor, because you know and I know that, and I've talked about this many times on shows, and I know you've said the same thing, that that nothing is out of the realm of possibility right now, that they're losing their grip on society. And they're not going to let it go without a major fight, Wayne. So that's one of my biggest concerns right now, what exactly these guys are capable of. You know, we've talked about false flags before and how they work to bring society under control. We talked about it a little bit in the last hour with Roger. But it is something I believe is in their playbook right now. I'm not talking about a small false flag. I'm talking something of a 9/11 scale event that would really bring control back into society for a short period of time, because I honestly believe they're losing it and they're terrified. What do you think?
Is that a possibility? I don't want to breathe life into something that might not be there.
I'm not either, Wayne. I'm just saying it's a possibility. We've read their playbooks, right? We've done this in the past. Go ahead.
You know, I'm not gonna argue that with you, because you're correct. But I think that this is a very fluid situation. This entire situation they did not see coming. And I think that they have pretty much played out the false flag scenarios that they had, that they tried to pull, and none of them were successful, even remotely, simply because they didn't have time to prepare some of these, you know, more nefarious intentions. But at this point, what people need to understand is, and this is where they're proving these guys the laughingstock of the world at every turn, is for an aspiring regime, they tend to lie, cheat, steal, leverage, justify their actions by you know, the old problem reaction solution situation, and to then herd the people into situations that give them power. And that's kind of come to an end here now with this, you know, the breaking of the spell, this satanic lullaby being snapped. This sense of listen, just listening to the science and doing what you're told, that's over. And the science is non-existent on their behalf. So these guys have got no legitimate argument left. Right.
None.
They've got not, they can't confuse the people anymore. They can't baffle them with garbage. They forced the people to become experts of their own health and wellness and these other things, that these evil things that they're trying to pull. And they can't snow the people on that anymore. So the only thing that they have left is the hammer. That's it. So as long as these people in power realize two things. A, that they are drastically outnumbered, and B, the thing that they failed to realize yet is they are more afraid of the media narrative than they are of the people. That is why they continue. They think they still have a way out. They think that they can still control the message. They can control the narrative. They can control the story. And that is straight up hubris and ego at this point, because this has made them so laughable. No matter what they do at this point, they are not going to escape. You know, there was probably a time, even throughout this convoy, through the initial parts of it, where they could have gotten away with saying, okay, let's just end the mandates and go back to normal. And you know what? They probably, most of them probably would have skated. They would have been able to go back to some semblance of a normal life afterwards. But they have pushed this so far, and they have proven themselves so extremely committed to holding their power at whatever cost, that when this does smoke does settle from all of this, they won't walk away. There will have to be a restoration and justice phase. It
Absolutely.
Cannot be any other way. So now they have really done themselves in.
They know what the potential is in the future, but that they're all going to be behind bars, or in the old days they'd be hanging from a rope. They know that, and they're panicking. Wait, they're truly keep panicking right now, and that's why I said, like, I'm just concerned about what they could possibly do. I'm not saying I'm just laying out scenarios that I think about all the time. Like I said, when they get really desperate, you know, they're not going to go down without a major fight. So I just say to people that something like that is possible. Not saying it's going to happen, but just be prepared for it, because they're going to play on the chaos that's going to create in society. They always do. So
I think that's exactly it. And I think there's a significance to this 10-day ban that they somehow managed to tell themselves was a legal thing to do, to ban the truckers from honking. They only gave it a 10-day ban. So that to me tells me that they've got a plan that was set to unfold that would end this before that time frame would be up. So this is where I am absolutely 100% you know, concerned, and I'm not trying to belittle anything or anything that you're saying there, because we absolutely have to be you know, incredibly aware of this. And I think that they actually are. And I think that you know, these clowns that are coming today, showing up there right now as we speak, that is probably their what they're tasked to do. You know, and whether typically it's probably not going to be anybody that from the freedom side of the fence that's going to do anything, but we have seen time and time again where Canadians on the Freedom side, they're welcoming. They'll let anybody walk into the crowd and give them a hug. And some of these guys will take off their Antifa hats and they will walk into this crowd and they will throw something at their Antifa buddies. You know, that's how they work. They are the hive. They are the Borg. They will take one for the team. That's just what they do for acceptance. Because if they said no, well, then they would get eaten up by their own people. And that's what keeps these people together, is not the fear of the world. They don't really want lockdowns and mandates. They don't want any of this garbage that's going on. But they have committed themselves to their little community, and this is what their community tells them to do. And on the conservative side of the fence, if you get into a disagreement with your community, you walk out the door and you go and find another one. Doesn't work for them. If they disagree, they get destroyed by their own people, right? So this is what they're driven by. This is what motivates them. So I'm really hoping that none of them really has the guts to do anything really stupid, because it's really not going to work at the end of the day. All it's going to do is innocent people are going to get hurt, and including a bunch of them, and nobody's going to win, because what has started is already tipped the pendulum so far that it cannot go back to the way it was. These guys that are in power currently right now, they can't stay. Even if this were to all go away right now, people need to remember that this group in control got a minority government based on 20% of the Canadian voters. So 80% didn't even vote. They were so badly felt like they were political orphans, they didn't even bother to cast a vote. So that's the only way Trudeau got in. Enough of us hated politics so bad that he was able to get in. But that's not going to work anymore either. So Trudeau's going to be done. All of these politicians, and it doesn't matter which side of the party fence that they claim to be on, have proven themselves to be World Economic Forum agents, and they're not going to walk away. So these guys really now, they're scrambling to figure out who's going to fill their shoes.
Yeah, well, you look how far they've infiltrated our government here in the last 10 years, especially since Trudeau took power. You look at all his appointees in the cabinet, Wayne, and look at their backgrounds. And you definitely are going to start scratching your head, because so many of them are tied to globalist operatives or the Muslim Brotherhood of North America. It's absolutely astounding. And these are the people of high authority in our country put in place by our government. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out where he's taking the country, does it?
No, you know, and I wish it was as easy as just blaming the Liberals for all of this, but it really isn't. This
started before the Liberals.
It started in the Harper years, early in the Harper years, and it was set up, initiated before Harper, through independents and some Liberals that were, you know, playing both sides of the fence. But it was actually the Harper government that started to make it possible. It was Stephen Harper and Jason Kenney that wrote the Paris Agreement, for crying out loud, that became the UNSDA. So these guys are deeply, deeply, deeply entrenched in all of this. And unfortunately for them, they pushed this so far that they can no longer hide. And this Canada has always been the prize. Schwab has been very gleefully bragging about how he's been able to place his people in the highest positions of power. And you look at the concentration of World Economic Forum representatives in Canada, it is staggering. And it's not just at the federal level. This goes right down to the municipal levels. Every city has a chapter of new young leaders that is sponsored by the same organization.
Exactly.
The councillors, the aldermen, they're all either willing participants or bought and paid off by these organizations through the Strong Mayor's Commissions and all of these organizations. Our Canadian management system at every level has been infiltrated and corrupted by foreign operatives.
Absolutely. Our city council does not work for the citizens of Terrace or your town. That mayor is a member of the Council of Mayors of British Columbia who are doing the government's directive at the municipal level, folks. Got to take back our communities at the municipal level. Steve wanted to add something here real quick. Steve, you wanted to say something?
Yes, I did. What you just mentioned, both of you, about a minute ago, it almost makes you wonder. It doesn't matter who you vote for, huh?
And that's the sad truth of it. And this is where people are really quickly now starting to figure out. When Trudeau first came into power, he said some things, and people just shrugged it off as, you know, that was just his progressive liberal babbling. But they're starting to figure out that no. This was some real, really not nasty stuff. I almost said Nazi, but it's kind of the same thing. This is really this abomination that Trudeau has created when he stated early on that he would make Canada the first post-nation state of the United Nations. Well, folks, this is what that looks like. And his process of doing that was to sign us onto a couple of quote-unquote non-binding agreements called the UNSDA and the Migration Compact, which were falsely labeled documents. They're falsely labeled policy. What these things were, and they were labeled falsely on purpose so that anybody that would criticize them would be labeled a racist or these kinds of things because they made the titles so that you couldn't argue them. But when you start to look at these quote-unquote non-binding agreements, they were absolutely binding agreements, divvying up our nation, our society, our people, our policy, our culture, our education, our finances, our land. Everything began this immediate shift to the control of the World Economic Forum. Every policy developed in Canada, every law created in Canada is not, since then has not been created in Canadian interests. It has been created to bring us in line with the World Economic Forum's policies, this UNSDA and the Migration Compact.
Yep.
Everything. Yep. Health was the first thing that the new economy, this fiat monopoly money economy is going to ultimately be replaced with a farm economy. We are only going to – all business is not going to be about health. It's going to be about pharma. So this is where doctors and practitioners of health and wellness were the first targets. They were the first ones that needed to be eliminated. Everything is to be replaced with a jab. There is going to be no treatment. There is going to be no alternative health. There is going to be no such thing as getting vitamin D from the sun because that is all going to become a lie. But here's your shot. And all along through it, all of this, we've been screaming about the implications of these experiments. And some of these doctors have literally thrown their careers away just to try and warn people about what's coming. And for the last year, we've been telling people what the direct results of this is going to be. And then yesterday, I get notification that, yep, Canada is now making home AIDS tests for mass availability.
Yeah, imagine that, eh? Remember the song, Wayne? Everything we do, think, or say will come from the pill we took today. When was that song? That was released back, what, in the late 80s? And they were telling us then, buddy, what was coming. They've been planning this
ask
for
Alice?
A long time ago. Yeah, just ask Alice. There's another one, buddy. And people thought it was entertainment, but boy, do we ever know different now. When we talk about everything that's going on in our country, Wayne, it's you know, I sit here some days and I'm just like, I'm overwhelmed. I really am. I look at all the things that are working against us right now. And I ask myself, every day if Canadians have the backbone to stop this. Well, you know what? I got my answer here in the last couple of weeks, because we are seeing that happen in our country right now. And it is so inspiring to see, you know, for the last couple of years, there's been days when, and I know you've felt the same way, that, you know, we're working hard, we're really trying to wake people up, but we're really not seeing a major breakthrough in society, but now we are. And I'm telling you, it sure inspired me here in the last week, buddy. I'm telling you. And it's inspired a lot of Canadians. It's got to inspire people that are watching what's going on. We're spearheading a movement around the planet right now. So kudos to Canada.
You know, amen to that. And it's been tough. It's really been tough. You know, trying to keep that sense of moving forward, that sense of strength for the communities, the sense of not necessarily inspiration, but fortitude, the sense of being able to discern things, not falling into deep states of trauma. This has been a battle daily, from morning till night, and it's been incessant, and it's tough when people look to you for answers and solutions, and sometimes the best you can give them is to hold on. The insanity is unsustainable, and a year ago we started to realize that, okay, you know, as tough as it was, they definitely made it as tough as it could possibly be. When I look at the work that we put in, and I'm talking right now in general for so many people that are like me, that have created a platform or done something and stuck to it, you know, through the hits, because, man, I've had my head knocked off the block I don't know how many times in between, but we kept going and we kept going and we kept going in spite of it all. I don't know, you know, what nation on earth could possibly be, as far as for considered a democratic nation. I don't know what nation could possibly have been more censored and abused than the Canadian independent media population. And in spite of them, we continue to grow. We continue to speak. We continue to share the truth. We continue to be there for the people. We continue to be accessible to help, to remember our humanity. And that has me at a point here now where, you know, as much as I would like to be there right on the tip of the action this time around, I'm wore out, man. I'm tired. I'm beat up. It doesn't mean there's any less work. This way, though, there's a whole lot less walking. That's kind of where it's at. So at the same time, as I wish that I was there, I sometimes just sit back and I give a great big sigh, and I am so grateful that people got enough to figure it out so that we could be where we're at today. And that's a huge shout out to all of the guys like you and me that have stuck to it. You know, pat yourselves on the back, because you made a difference. It might have been just one at a time, or one a day, or one a week, but now here we are, and what is underway cannot be stopped.
If it's one or 10 or 20 a day, Wayne, it's always a good day if we can get people to really understand what's going on in our country, because you know that one person is going to turn into five people, and that five people are going to turn into 20 people. And now that we see Canadians really starting to open up their hearts to each other, and that's the one thing I've noticed, that people are looking at me now and there's tears in their eyes. I was talking to a lady and her little girl, and she was crying. And as much as, you know, I was talking to her mom, she says, you know, as much as we try to keep all this away from her, she's kind of really concerned, you know, and that kind of stuff, buddy, I'll tell you, that really motivates us, motivates me just to work as hard as I can. I'm only a little voice out here, but like I said, if I reach one person during the course of a show, Wayne, that is a very good day in my life, my friend. And we're seeing it now. We're seeing people finally starting to wake up. I'm human. I really am. I got to say that, you know, and there's been times here in the last 4 or 5 months where we just, it's so obvious what's happening in our world, and yet people just didn't seem to want to address it. And now we've just seen this incredible change in our society. It is really time for folks to put the pedal to the floor in any way you can to reach out to your friends and neighbors, because people are paying attention, Wayne, and it's a good day for Canada. It's a good day for the world.
Yeah, it's one of those things somebody said to me early on in my journey of this evolution of my life, that you never know which is going to be the one that you reach that's going to change the world. You know, and that's something that really, really stuck with me, because we don't know that in our conversations. Sure, there's nothing that changes our lives more than the books we read and the people we meet. That's an old euphemism that is great for us to keep ourselves in balance. But when our lives are changed by the people we meet, we don't always know how much of their lives are going to change when they meet us. And absolutely, that is such a humbling position to be in. Once you have that realization, it changes everything and how you handle people, situation, and things. And that's when you can accept that and realize that's your role, you found your place.
Well, like Wayne, when you get to a point in your life where you look in the mirror and you go, holy smokes, this is beyond insanity, that if we don't get involved, the future that's coming for this planet right now, I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. It'll be a horror show like no horror show that you've ever seen in your life. And to be able to just try and get that to people and see people now to start to, or start to understand that. It's very, very encouraging. I think we're at that tipping point right now. I honestly believe that we're going to win this now. I couldn't say that 3 or 4 months ago, honestly, but I think we're going to win this now. We can't lose it. You know that. If we lose this, then we're done. But I think enough Canadians now are getting it that we're going to make the difference, my friend.
I've always had an unconditional faith that God wins. I just wasn't always sure that I'd see it in my lifetime. That has changed for me. I do believe that we'll see it in this lifetime. And part of it that helped me to believe that even stronger was when I said to people, this was one of the things that kind of started the or inspired the Ethics Over Fear group, was I started to ask people, what would this look like on the other side? What would this look like if they win? What would this look like if we win? What would it look like on the other side? And you know, the most intelligent, articulate people I knew at that time had no answer. They had no idea what it was going to look like on the other side. So we started to look at, envision, and think about what does it need to do, what needs to happen so that we can see the other side as we want it and as we feel it should be. And where does humanity take us? And this is something that I think more and more people are now beginning to see with the evolution of alternative creations and entities and organizations and all of the corrupt things. We're not going to be able to rebuild them. So so many people have you know, it's like you got an old barn in your backyard, but you want a new barn. You've got to really be at the perfect place for the new barn. Do you bother to go rip down the old one before you build the new one? No, it's just a waste of effort. It'll come down on its own, right?
Nah, the barn was worth a fortune now, Wayne. I'll tear it down.
Well, that barn was worth a whole lot more 6 months ago when they were messing around with prices on it. But you know, it's the analogy that
I know what you're saying.
You know,
never let an old barn go to waste.
They're just building better. You know, we're not there building back. We're building forward, and we're building better. Because Canadians deserve better, the world deserves better, and we have not even come close, I think, yet to the darkest part of this war on humanity. We're only just going to begin to see that. But once the chaos is over, then we will truly be able to get to the healing and the building forward. And I'm so confident now that there is so many people that see that tomorrow, a better tomorrow than what we have now, because it's been really easy to point out everything that is absolutely corrupted beyond repair in some of these old barns.
Yeah, the whole thing has to come down, and we need to build a new one, that's for sure. Where we're going forward, like I said, I think we're at a pinnacle time right now, Wayne. I honestly feel that if we were to lose this at this point and go back to being cowering in our houses under government rule, then we're going to lose it. I don't think that's going to happen. I think right now we're seeing a really cool thing happen around the world. I think it's either do or die, my friend. I couldn't say that more truly. I'm not a fear-mongering type of guy, but I agree with you that I think we're going to go through some bad stuff before we get to the good stuff. Have to live it through. Get your popcorn. We only got a couple minutes, Wayne, so I'm going to let you before I let you go here real quick, if you want to talk about ethics over fear for a second, and then give me a last thought for the day, and then I'll have to let you go, my friend. Hour's gone quick.
There's going to be a major announcement coming up on Ethics Over Fear platform tomorrow. Check that out at ethicsoverfear.com. This will please people immensely. As I was saying earlier, we're never going to get to tomorrow unless we go through a reconciliation and justice stage. A lot of people are asking what's next, and I have said from the beginning that we are in the fight for humanity. Humanity is literally at stake, and with this, where we're at right now, if this doesn't do the job, then nothing will. And I believe 100% that this will do the job, because it goes back to how you've heard me talk about it so many times: jurisdiction, jurisdiction, jurisdiction. It doesn't matter what the little suits in the office say. It's a small group of people at any point in time. History has proven this, that when the court of public opinion adjourns, those little groups of people with their suits, they don't mean nothing. The court of public opinion will ultimately make the decision and the judgment. That is where we are. The world, not just Canada, and I looked at this from the Canadian perspective, and I never expected it to go internationally like it has, but this is literally the working class individual. And if you look through history, all of the history books, it's the working class that makes the change, always, every single time. And we are about to enter into the most brightest, amazing, beautiful time our species has ever had. But we've got to get through this darkness first. And it's always the darkest before the dawn. And that's where we're at here right now. And if people want to keep up with what's going on, we pretty much had to leave most of social media platforms behind. They too will be reborn as time goes on, but find us on ethicsoverfear.com, whatsupcanada.org. We've made some major changes, and we are prepared for what the next steps are going to be moving forward, because this has got to go somewhere.
Well, I got my popcorn, Wayne. I'm ready. Thanks for coming in. Thanks for coming in, bud. Always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And I look forward to our next conversation.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Anytime. Okay, folks, I'm going to be back next hour. I'm going to get some real information from the Hill here. I've got three people coming in that are there in the next hour, and I'll find out what exactly Antifa is up to today and what kind of shenanigans are going on. I'll be back in a couple minutes. welcome back, Third Hour, folks, and thanks again for Wayne for coming in. Always enjoy talking with that gentleman.
Hey, Brian, are you happy? I hate WLD again. It suck my dick, but I'm happy.
What's this win mean to the team?
It means that we can keep our head out of our ass and start playing football the way we're capable.
Todd Ian McDougall. Todd is one of the people at Winnipeg Alternative Media. Todd was in the original convoy going across the country. He's been there right from day one. So good to have him in and share some of the thoughts about what we see going on in Ottawa. Thanks for coming in, Todd.
Yeah, always a pleasure, Barry. Thanks for having me.
So you've been there right from day one, Todd. How's the experience been, man? I mean, I would have loved to have been there. I really would have.
Well, I'm sure so many people still from across the country and beyond would. You know, it's when you're like 3 weeks in, I guess, like that, for myself, being independent media, it becomes a bit of a struggle to not kind of film the same thing over and over again. Like, I know, I still get requests and stuff all the time to just like, hey, just show us what's happening. Just film that main stage again. Just film that, you know, those wonderful crowds, which, of course, I'm all for. But after doing that for about 3 weeks, you kind of tend to want to find things that are something different, something a little more unique to show people. That's become a pretty big struggle as of late. Then when it seems like there is a possible moment like that, like I had happened today, there's just so much confusion that it can be a wild goose chase, whether there's actually, and that wild goose chase can go two ways. It can be a wild goose chase where there's actually really nothing going on and nothing to film, or you can just not get the right info and just kind of miss it. So in the last hour before leaving the downtown area again, I had somebody tell me that there was a counter protest happening at Riverside and Bank. And I figured, well, that must mean here in the downtown area. I've been on Bank Street a million times. I was a little unsure about where Riverside was. I did a quick little kind of Google Maps search that I guess did not give me the correct info at the time. And so still, you know, the chase was on, and I started going up and down Bank Street asking, you know, truckers and other people that I've talked to many times over the last few weeks, you know, hey, what did you hear? What did you see? What's going on? I've heard a rumor. And everybody just kind of went, nothing, man. And I went, okay, well, clearly, yeah, I'm looking around and nope, nothing. So, okay, all right, well, you know, I guess we've got what we can get today. Usually the night is pretty quiet and we have lots of people that were in fairly consistent communication with, where if all of a sudden the policing gets ramped up in the dead of night, that guys will give us a shout and let us know. So we're always, you know, open to running or wherever to go chase something and to get eyes on something that, of course, could be, I don't want to just say a big story, but something that could be, you know, something that everybody's going to want to and need to see, right, such as overbearing policing. Right. And those things have been not barely a factor at all. But yeah, I can confirm there was counter protesters in an area that we had no idea anything would have been happening the entire time we've been here. So like far opposite side of Ottawa, South Ottawa, at a bridge that is still Bank Street, I guess. But yeah, like several blocks away from any and from the entire convoy and where everything is happening, downtown Ottawa and Parliament Hill. This area is completely removed from all of that. I guess so obviously it's a bridge that's still open. I believe vehicles that were just hitting the Ottawa area today were probably coming across that bridge. Counter protesters must have found out about that. So I guess the impetus there must be try to slow them down from getting to the rest of the convoy. And so there was some issues. I've seen a couple quick video clips. It's nothing major. Nobody's getting hurt. There's no damage being done. The one guy that first mentioned this to me said that there was clearly roughly 100 or so counter protesters. The police were there trying to let the vehicles through, but as the vehicles were going through, the counter protesters were still kind of able to like pound on the trucks as they push through. So yeah, you know, a bit of an interesting scene, I'm sure. I wish I could have had eyes on it. It's probably wrapped up by this point because it would have started going on more than an hour ago at this point. So I think it's probably all done with. Of course, if it gets worse, we'll get word about it. So yeah, that's the big story, I guess, kind of today. I don't know how many people had eyes on it because again, it was nowhere near the main event.
Well, CBC for sure will be doing a big blurt about it tonight, guaranteed. There's
some good footage. Randy Hillier's already shared a little bit, a couple of clips around on Twitter. So that's the one little bit that I've seen. Again, it's nothing. I don't want to say it's anything super major, but yeah, that was a situation today, and tough to say where it's at right now. So and no again, real, that, no now for sure violence. We'll be looking at that spot from this point on.
Right. So no real violence that you've heard about, except for a little pounding on roofs and stuff like that.
That's right. Yeah, it's all been very random, isolated incidents. You know, very, very silly stuff. I've seen more photos of randoms walking through the crowd, doing a zig heil, or carrying signs that are just stupid. And that's nothing more than Yahoo's either trying to start something silly, you know, hoping that people photograph them and go, "Oh, look, see, the convoy supports this guy." But none of that has panned out. None of that's panned out.
So, in generality, the police have been pretty good with you guys, Todd?
Oh, yeah, of course. Absolutely. Yeah, no complaints there whatsoever. It's become commonplace now when you're walking around the downtown area. You're walking around Wellington, right there at Parliament Hill, when, where the the parliamentary police are always kind of out there watching the gates where the vehicles can go in and out of the area. In and out of Parliament Hill. People stop and talk to them all the time, and you just see it. It's commonplace now that people just have random friendly little conversations with all three detachments, I would say. Parliamentary police, Ottawa police, and OPP.
And the interactions have been positive, you'd say?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of them for the last 3 weeks. I mean, there's been kind of, I think, slight changes where just because I think the first weekend, or maybe even in that first week, there were so many people that I think were getting footage of police officers being very openly friendly with protesters. So I think they were all given a bit of a heads up, like, look, it's fine to be, it's fine to have a quick little chat or something like that, but, can you maybe make sure that you're not being filmed all the time? Can you not just talk to groups for like 20 minutes when you're on shift? Can you not be like openly accepting like coffees and granola bars for everybody? So there's been a little bit of a shift in that. Yeah, but it really
kind of stuff out there, guys.
you guys are, you are still working and you're on duty, which it really doesn't mean much of anything. So so maybe the conversations have got a little bit shorter, but they've all still been very nice, and you still get lots of waves from them. And you'll get random waves from them when you just walk by. You're just walking down the street, the officer's in their car, and they'll just give you a wave.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, the little convoys that we've been doing up here, Todd. The RCMP are always out. They've got corners blocked off, and, they're out there quite a bit, and every one of them is giving you a thumbs up and waves, man. It's pretty funny the reaction we're getting from the RCMP on the local convoys. Ours yesterday with Todd, it almost doubled in size from the week before. So
and I've been wondering,
there's an awakening going on here.
No kidding, yeah. And is there still some kind of, like, is it like a slow roll or a blockade or what's going on? Like, is there something near the Canada-US border there in BC?
Well, down at the border, there's quite a few things going on. But even in every little community in British Columbia now is doing slow rolls on the weekend.
That's awesome.
And they're growing. It's the one we did here in Paris yesterday. It started off with, there's probably, I'd say, 60 vehicles in the parking lot at the Northern. But by the time we were heading up the highway towards Kitimat, that had grown to about 110. And then we picked up another 50, 60 vehicles going into Kitimat, and then more in Kitimat joining us. It was probably twice the size as the week before. And we're seeing all kinds of new faces out there coming out to the rallies that we have in Kitimat, in the parking lot in Kitimat on Saturdays. I've seen it doubled last week. It is
cool.
Encouraging.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, no kidding. And it's been, I think, yeah, for sure. I think everybody might have got a little bit nervous with the situation at Windsor. And, of course, it should be fairly obvious to people that that situation doesn't even matter how much the support, like people were complaining today because, apparently that, blockade has been, I don't want to say taken down, but it's been they've had the police in that area, I guess, have had more of an effect so far on what's going on there than in any other location across the country. And that really shouldn't be too hard for people to understand, because we were mentioning this right off the hop that two things, right? One, that it was one of the most amazing sights to see. I was saying that those men and women on that, in that bridge, were doing a far more braver job than I'd say anything happening in Ottawa right now. I mean, holding that bridge was one hell of a task. But of course, not just because of its size, mostly because of the sheer dollar value to what you're doing there. So, of course, you saw that got attacked more than anything else happening across the country. That was the main one to focus on. So you have, you know, Doug Ford probably just freaking out with the entire automotive industry breathing down his neck from both the American and Canadian side, going like, this is the only way that we, you know, run our industry between the two countries is that bridge. So that's a fair chunk of money. So when the automotive industry can throw a whole bunch of cash at, like, excuse us. And of course, that's all CBC and CTV had on for like 48 plus hours, 72 hours was no, not protesters. No, not truckers. No, nothing else. Just the CEOs of the automotive industry whining and moaning, which I found to be pretty ridiculous. But I guess par for the course. So after 72 hours more of whining and moaning, I guess they're going to start to get their way. And that's just because of the sheer dollar value at play there.
25% of the economy between the two countries goes across that bridge, Todd. So that's...
I know. And another interesting thing that I heard today that I want to... I'm going to have to dig into when we get into the hotel tonight, is I heard that the company... none of this is verified right now. This is all... I guess I could say it's rumor from what I've heard throughout the day, is that because they're actually breaking up that convoy, they're breaking up that blockade to some degree. I can't confirm to what degree, but to some. Apparently, the tow truck company that is actually going to try to haul vehicles away, where I think some of the drivers might have already been taken away. I heard of some arrests. I know for sure of a few, I think, actual truckers that got arrested because of obviously saying, you know, no, either arrest me or I'm not leaving the truck. So if that was the case with however many of those vehicles, of course, it's going to take a little bit of work to tow them all out of there. And I've heard that the tow company that said yes was an American tow company because all the Canadian tow companies were continuing to say no. So that's pretty interesting. Already there was people in Ottawa on the streets saying, like, you know, if that's the case, what the hell? You know, why is an American company coming in to screw with this? Like, that's, you know, if they're coming across, you know, our side of the border to do that, that's a problem. I don't really know how big of a legal issue that may or may not be. It probably won't be one. I'd say if the province of Ontario and Canada is saying, like, no, by all means, guys, come on in and help us with this, and it's probably going to be just fine. But it's interesting. It certainly is interesting. The other thing that's interesting about that was it had seemed up until about the last 24 hours that lots of, you know, like the support from the U.S. was pretty, pretty palpable, right? Like, we know of lots of support from the United States, including their truckers. So I don't know if that just for some reason excluded the state of New York. Of course, it's a Democrat state, so maybe that's the issue. Funny enough, after thinking for three solid weeks that the support from the American side was only building, they, I guess, received really no major support from the American side, and that might have opened up the door for an American tow company to say, okay, you know, hey, we're going to go get a big fat paycheck from the Canadians and do this for them, which is like, okay, that's weird. Certainly not the way I would have envisioned that going. But like I'm saying, there's clearly some more information there that I'd have to dig into when I get a chance.
Lots of stuff going on there, Todd. It's hard to keep up with it all. It really is.
It's changing by the hour.
Yeah, I know that people I have talked to on site there in the last 3 or 4 days tell me that these guys are not going to go away, that it's going to take arrests and imprisonment to get these truckers out of Ottawa. So we'll see where it goes here in the next week. I think we're going to see some pretty interesting times. Government's getting
desperate. Absolutely. And one last thing I can confirm, because, of course, you know, hometown province, so, you know, Winnipeg, alternative media itself always has eyes on this. Although, I got to call my buddy Kurt, because I know he's at the Emerson border right now, but we've had no video coming from there yet today, so I'll have to find out what's up with that. We usually have a couple reports coming from that blockade every day. But I can say for sure it's been very peaceful there. In fact, I was really surprised to hear that the police presence at the Canadian-U.S. border in Emerson, Manitoba, has been blocked for a few days now. And very little to no police presence, in fact, is what I've had reported. Like, RCMP are like a couple cruisers in the area. Sometimes they even kind of come and go. But no major police presence there. Of course, it's nowhere near as important of a border crossing as Windsor and others. But yeah, so that's kind of interesting. So we'll have more to report on from that situation.
Cool. Well, you know what, Todd, maybe if you're still there next week, maybe I'd get you back in for a few minutes to bring us up on what's going on. I like to try to give the Hill an hour every week now to see what see from people and hear from people what exactly is going on. So if you get
time, that's a great idea, man.
We'll get you back in for a few minutes the next week if you want, and you can bring us up to date what's going on. Got to let you go because I've got 3 people coming in this hour, buddy. So thanks for joining me for 20 minutes and letting our audience know what's going on.
Hey, always a pleasure. Sorry that I couldn't confirm a little bit more for everybody, but like I said, and I'm sure most people know, you know, everything is moving and changing pretty fast a lot of these days. And just the way it goes, but we'll do our best to try to, you know, keep reporting and keep figuring things out as they're changing.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Todd.
My pleasure. Thank you, Barry.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Okay, hey, Barry. Let's...
Rick Boswick, and I'm going to let my dog out the door here.
And yeah.
Let
me see if I can do this again quick in here. I got this new Skype, and it's hard to figure out. Participants. Okay, add. Dial pad.
Sorry about that. My dog had to go outside, folks.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we're going to bring Rick in for a few minutes and have chat with him.
Calling Rick. We're still on air, by the way, Barry. So, did you see what I wrote in the Shake and Wake chat? Maybe the RCMPs have told him to go pound sand, Barry.
Hello?
Hey, is this Rick? How you doing, man?
I'm doing okay. I'm kind of doing triple duty here. I'm feeding the baby at the same time I'm going to do a podcast, so it's okay.
Well, you're a multi-talented guy. First off, I haven't had a chat to chat with you for a while. You're in, and like you said, the second hour here, I kind of like to hear your perspective on what's been going on in Ottawa. I know you've been boots on the ground, and you've been there pretty well from the start of it, I believe. So, what are you seeing going on right now, Rick?
Well, what I see going on right now is I see the same co-opting, the same institutional governance that wants to step in and trying to, you know, direct the movement. But on the ground, I see a whole bunch of loving Canadian patriots that don't like our kids being suffocated. They're in it for a penny. They're in it for a pound. This is the hill they're willing to die on. And that's, you know, I mean, even Trudeau now, he's basically saying, you made your point. So therefore, you know, just go home. Well, no, we're not going home, not until we see some change. That's what I see. I see your average individual who maybe doesn't have a podcast, who maybe isn't a public figure or a public name, who is basically spending 24/7 shoveling snow or taking garbage out of the red zone and bringing gas in. I see a death by a thousand cuts. You know, they always say that, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. Well, it takes the entire world to rise up and say, guess what? No more.
Well,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, we're seeing that right now too, Rick. I think anybody that's really paying attention to what's going on sees a catastrophic change in our society. That we're seeing Canadians now waking up by the hundreds of thousands. It's overdue. We've been waiting for this, but I believe we're at a tipping point right now, and we're going to win. I honestly believe that. Well, now. You know what, Rick? I wouldn't have been able to say that three months ago, because it seems like no matter what we were doing, they weren't listening to us. But all of a sudden, they're listening. They have no choice. Go ahead.
Well, they are. They're absolutely listening, and that's the matter. I mean, it's about holding the line. It's about forcing them, the powers that be, to address our situation. Because, like I said, just because Trudeau wants to announce that he heard us does not mean he's going to act. I mean, he has his agenda. He has his masters, just like he claims to be our master. And we're not having any more of it. You know, it's monumental. I mean, the last 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years of human history is now, the dynamic is changing, because you can only take so much away from a person. It's like, you know, there's nothing more dangerous than a man who has nothing left to lose. So what about a country that has nothing left to lose? What about a planet that has nothing left to lose? We're tired of the status quo. And, you know, I mean, ultimately, I don't know how this thing's going to end. I really don't. I think what they're doing right now, I think the narrative of talking about how we have kids as human shields, I think that you're going to see some sort of dramatic nighttime raid where you have a mix of different municipalities, police departments, and CAS. And the minute they start trying to yank kids out of these, like, I don't want it. Obviously, nobody wants violence, but I don't see the Liberal government backing down, and I don't see us backing down. So it's, you know, it's an unstoppable object versus an immovable force.
It's a very, very, very dangerous situation, Rick.
It's very tenuous. I mean, even to this point, even me and my partner, we've got into arguments where she has a little bit of a worrisome January 6th defeatist attitude. And it's like, look, I've already it's not like I can't take back my videos. I've already promoted the thing. So if they want to say, you know, giving material support to terrorism, like the gas cans or food or anything, like, they have racks of clothes out there for free. I mean, people who don't trust the leadership, you know, who have donated either $10 million to the GoFundMe that's now debunked, or the other $10 million to the Gift and Go that's now kind of debunked, and BJ Ditcher and the questionable, you know, leadership, they have volunteer tents down there, literally, with hundreds of names of people volunteering, and probably $10,000 at least, what I could gather from, you know, an 18-liter water gallon container in donations. So we're figuring out our own way. And that's one thing I would like to say, you know, is if you don't trust the leadership, get down here. So, you know, knit some mittens. I was down there like last Saturday, and my feet were freezing because I had like 9 people from Wingham staying in my house, because that's, you know, anything that I can to support. The minute I took my shoes off because I was freezing, I had a guy come over and say, sit by our fire. I have fresh, clean socks for you. Let us, like, the love and the compassion, the unity, the family, the hope that we've been missing for so long under these COVID restrictions, it's finally back. And it's heartwarming. It's energizing. It's unbelievable, the feeling. And yeah, there's only so much I can say to your audience. You have to get here. If you can, within any means, you need to get here. You need to experience this for yourself. This is something unprecedented. I hate to kind of mimic, you know, Trudeau, and it's, oh, we're living in unprecedented times, so therefore give up your rights. This is so different.
I've I've seen quite a few of the videos there, Rick, on site, and you can feel the energy. You can feel the energy everywhere that event is happening right now. You can feel the energy between the people, and it's
really well. And things are ever developing. Things are ever developing.
And you're
now have structures being built on structures. So, like, you know, I go down there about 4 days ago, and then I see, you know, a certain amount of trucks and a certain amount of positioning. And then now, all of a sudden, I go back down there 3 days later, and it's like they've literally built, like, platforms on top of structures. Like, it's like, I don't want to say shanty town, but kind of like, you know, like, literally they're building, they're, now that they're there, and I had another patriot, Adrena, just come up with her friend, and they had hotel problems, so we put them up. And I don't know how to explain it. It's a feeling like nothing I've ever experienced. It feels like Woodstock. It's nobody is the supreme leader of this. Like, this is so multifaceted that every single person I've ever worked with in the activist community for the past like 6 years, they're all involved, but none of them are a leader. None of them. They're all just wanting to participate. And that's the thing. If I can go down there and say it's too cold, say it's minus 30 and I can't take my gear down there, but I could shovel some snow, I could pick up some garbage, I could give a hug, I could give a coffee. Absolutely. That's what I'm going to do. And it's me, and it's the efforts of tens of thousands of other people that scares the shit out of the powers that be.
Huh. So how many people are there during the day, during the week right now, Rick, would you say, on the ground?
Well, okay, that's ballpark guess. The main studio, the main Metcalf and Wellington area, you always have at least a couple hundred. On the weekends, it expands. So that goes from a couple hundred to maybe 2,000-3,000. And then you have, like, I haven't even had a chance to explore the city. So, like, I know about Coventry. I know that that is a way station, and that's where most of the resources are being held. Sandra Solomon came up about a week ago. She's coming back. She's going to cut hair for free for truckers at Coventry. We have three or four different locations, different intersections, including parking lots like the Bubble Bus, where they're building on what they've occupied. So I don't want to say, like, I don't want to talk about military because it's not like it's fortification. It's just, hey, let's build a platform on top of a shed. Let's build, a warming station so that people can, you know, warm themselves. We finally have porta potties down there, which is positive. Of course, the porta potties are right in front of Trudeau's office, and half of them have, this is the office of Mr. Tam, and this is the office of Mr. Ford, and this is the office of Mr. Trudeau. So it's hilarious. We had the PPC. They were basically running the pancake breakfast this morning. It was a 3-hour lineup. The thing went a block and a half long just to get a pancake. Well, what do you want? Sorry, I got a baby who needs to read.
That's okay, man. He wants to be on the radio too.
That's okay. Yeah, she does. She does.
She does. Okay.
But yeah, no, the thing is ever evolving, and it's, you know, at the same time, I can't really get a grasp on the numbers because, you know, at the same time that I can go down there sometimes and then come back, and at the same time I'm walking in, people are leaving. At the same time I'm walking out, people are arriving. So I'm guessing that most likely all hotels are booked. We've already had reports from my crowd from Wingham that they've doubled the prices. They basically said now it's $300 per hotel room per night because supply and demand. Yeah.
$300 a night.
$300 a night. Yes.
Wow. Well,
I mean, Ed's busy staying in a shelter in a hostel. It's about $35 a night, and he says it's got good Wi-Fi and it's decent. So, you know,
yeah.
We're doing whatever we can.
Yeah, that's pretty outrageous price for a motel room. But
I know.
Yeah, never take advantage.
I mean, another example of it ever evolving is, so I've been down there about 5 or 6 days out of the entire 17. And Now I go down there, and they have like a Trinitron screen. They have a huge ass like big screen TV, and then Hildebrandt did. Obviously, it's Sunday, so Hildebrandt was rocking as he always is, and it's ever evolving. So like, support is coming in from across the country and across the world. I mean, the world is watching, and now we have copycat convoys in multiple different countries. We're done with this. We're done with this. We're literally to the point right now as a human race, as a human species, that we're done with you. You can't lie to us anymore, and we would rather die than be oppressed, to be a slave race. And that's what I see.
I agree. Well, I don't think they're going to be able to put this genie back in the bottle now. I really don't. I think that you might see the governments all of a sudden all back down, which is, I think, part of the ploy right now, is they might back down and give us our so-called rights back. But in a month or two down the road, it'll be right back to where it is right now. We see a lot of countries backing down right now, and certain provinces in Ontario or in Canada are backing down. We see other provinces that are ramming it up. How could the Canadian public accept this kind of rhetoric? See what Bonnie Henry said in British Columbia here. Buddy, is just outrageous what they're doing.
It's obscene. I mean, the amount of BS they were expected to swallow, and, you know, like, I'm sorry, your poo doesn't smell like roses. Like, you're a criminal, and most of the government is criminal. Like, even Hildebrandt today, like, I was very, very happy to see some people start to speak out in the House of Commons. But where were you when C4 passed without one nay, as opposed to all the yays? Like, politicians are politicians. They go with what's popular, no matter what it is. If killing Jews is popular, they're going to be there, right? And it's only since we've had this blowback, and since they can't just all of a sudden remove us. Even the military said, screw your hat. We're not. I think that's – I don't even know if Canada has a counter to posse comitatus in the United States. You cannot use your military to enforce domestic. Maybe they do, but – the lines are being drawn. Even the forces on the ground, like, you can't tell me that half of these people, half of these police officers who have spent the last 6, 10, 12 days down there, that once they get the orders to tear gas these people and these women and these children and these elderly and these brown and these yellow and these white people, they're going to go through with it. Because eventually the common human heart is going to break through, and people are willing, I think they're willing, at least some of them are willing to make that same choice that, you know what, I don't care about my next paycheck. I need to live with myself for the rest of my life.
You know, Rick, I think you're seeing that battle right now inside of a lot of police officers in this country right now.
Their hearts are torn. I think a lot of them are right on the fence.
I'm going to agree with that because I don't interact with RCMP officers, but I am interacting with a couple that are involved with Mounties for Freedom. And I'll tell you, my friend, these men are good men. Even though they're cops, they're good men. They're in this for all the right reasons, and they understand what's at stake. And I see that rubbing across the country right now through multiple police agencies that are getting behind Mounties for Freedom. We all got to get behind that organization, buddy.
Well, and we just had I had Ed call my partner up when I was downtown, and he was asking about questions about the chief of police resigning. Now, the chief of police, he's heavily in with UN. He was cherry picked for this position, but I believe it was don't quote me on it. It was a higher up. It was a higher up officer, and basically he resigned, saying I refuse to participate in this. So yes, these are human beings just like us, and I make sure every single time I go downtown to say thank you for your service and thank you for keeping the peace. And thank you, officer. I know you signed on to do the right thing. And I hope that eventually when the orders come down to do the wrong thing, you will refuse them. And I think you're going to see a huge split between, that's why they have to bring in new forces, because you can't have police that have already been down there for 10 days dealing with these peaceful people now that they know what it's about. So they're going to have to get the fresh recruits. They're going to have to. And I mean, we've had reports of military planes, orange designations coming into YYC or, Ottawa Airport.
Yeah.
And we obviously know about the Chinese cold weather training out in BC. Yeah. And in talking with some major podcasters, I've actually seen video where basically it looks like Chinese troops are embedded with the police and they're just monitoring the situation of how we handle things.
Nothing is off the table right now, and I've looked into a lot of that in the last couple of years, and there's lots of credence to what you're talking about right now, Rick, but we don't have time to get into that. I've only got you here for another minute or so, so I'm going to get you to share your last thoughts with Canadians and people around the world that are listening to this podcast about what's going on, what's going to happen in the next week here.
Well, listen, okay, so I've got reports that Monday, Tuesday, because obviously on the weekends we have the people coming in, the tourists, so to speak, the people that can't be down here 24/7. So the weekends are safe because the numbers are big. I think they're going to go after the kids. I think they're going to try and push all the buttons that they can to try and invoke violence from our side, which won't happen. And I have reports that basically Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, the hammer's coming down. It's lasted long enough. And that's why I'll do my diligence to be down there and make sure that I'm filming all the atrocities. But to your average, to your viewers, please support these people. If you don't trust the leadership, don't donate to the leadership. Just if you can physically get down here, then great. Whatever you can do, give a man a sandwich, bake some cookies, knit some clothes. Go and whatever you can do, we need all hands on deck. We need to fire everything at this because we're never going to get another chance at this. If we lose this, we lose Canada.
Thanks for coming in.
So that's my message. And it's a message of hope. It's a message of hope. Listen, we know we're under the gun. Like I said, when I signed on to be an activist, 6-7 years ago, I knew I was probably a losing battle. I knew that I was going to suffer because of my behavior. But if anybody's ever read the Bible to the end, we actually win. We actually win. Maybe not on this earth, but we do win. And you got to stay the course. You got to hold the line. And the amount of empowerment, the love, the respect, the family, the unity that you feel down there is nothing like I've ever experienced in my entire life.
Thanks for coming in, Rick. It's been a pleasure, my friend. I got to let you go.
Awesome. Okay. Bye for thank now. You, Barry.
We'll do this again soon. Okay. Bye.
Absolutely. Now. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, we're going to get Kellyanne Wolf in here in a second. She's going to bring us up to date what's going on in her neck of the woods. I'm going to grab a drink of water here. So
give me 2 seconds here, folks.
Yeah, I got to figure this out again.
Well, that's why I pay you the big bucks, Steve.
I guess. All right, let's see what happens.
What Rick just shared with his folk, I've heard from so many people that are on site that this is much bigger than a demonstration against the virus.
Hello?
Is that Miss Kellyanne Wolf?
Yes, it is Miss Kellyanne Wolf.
How you doing, Kelly?
I'm good, honey. How are you?
Good. Well, I told you I was going to get in here for the last 20 minutes of the show today, so thanks for coming in and sharing a few thoughts. Maybe you can bring us up to date what's going on in your neck of the woods. You're in Toronto, correct?
Absolutely. I'm in Toronto right now. So we just had a massive protest at Queen's Park in Toronto. We had about 10,000 people show up. The Lawn Canada hosted it. It was absolutely fantastic. It's so good to see all the original organizations that rose up against all of this nonsense come back together, and in such a strong effort. I mean, there was line flags absolutely everywhere, and Unified North made the official announcement that we're going to be moving forward on constitutional conventions. And I know that in Ottawa, Daniel Nagase was streamed in, and he made the announcement on behalf of Unified North there as well. So it's really fantastic. The things are happening, Barry.
Yeah. Daniel just did a really good video on YouTube. Go look it up, guys. I think he talked for about 25 or 30 minutes, but really hammered home some good points. So go look that one up today, guys. So what else is going on there, Kelly? How many trucks are in Toronto right now, you figure?
In Toronto, they're trying to scatter them as much as they can, but around the south side of Queen's Park, there is quite a few, maybe about 100 or so. Okay. But I know that there was about 25 kilometers of big trucks that were on their way down to the protest, but they were stopped on the DVP their way.
Right.
So, but what really concerns me is what happened in Windsor today. So we know that there's been the blockades going on at the border in Windsor, Ontario. And today, one of my partners for the Canadian Democratic Defense Association, and I believe that he's also working in conjunction with the Line Canada, Rich Drouillard was arrested by police aggressively. So there's video footage of it, and I'm going to be releasing it on both my Facebook, and I'm sure that the Line is going to be putting it up on their platform as well. But he's currently in custody right now. And they literally sent tons of officers in and big, huge, like, arrest buses and all that. And they arrested, as far as I know, so far about 15 people in a very aggressive manner. So, it's to be heard. I can't wait to see this video because, you know, it's unfortunate that there's so many officers out there that we're going to have to be making an example of in order to defend the integrity of the institution itself. You know, and in defense of all the officers out there that have their moral compass, in check.
Yeah, we were just talking about that, Kelly. We're seeing a real battle in the police forces right now. We're seeing so many police officers that are actually looking into their hearts and looking down the road a couple of years and asking themselves if this is the kind of society they want their children to grow up in. And to hell with the job, what is the real objective here of this government? We're seeing that right now in this country.
Well, this government is falling, right? And they've already caught wind about the agenda for Unified North. Now, for your listeners out there, Unified North is basically an assembly of non-government organizations and grassroots organizations, nonprofits, et cetera, that have risen across Canada against these restrictions over the last 2 years. And they're the most effective organizations and media companies. And we put them all together, everybody without any political affiliation, to stand up in defense of the people. And what we are doing is we're putting forth a draft constitution over the course of the next 2 weeks for Canadians to have an opportunity to make a decision on whether or not they want to really make a change. So nobody across the country seems to have any long-term actual remedy in place. So, we decided we cannot allow the actions of such committed and passionate Canadians who really, really love one another and really love our society and really, really want to protect, our God-given rights and our children. We can't let their efforts be in vain. So we decided that, yes, I think it's time for change. And we have to leverage within our population right now across Canada. There's occupations taking place in every single province around every legislature. We've got every single border crossing right now occupied by truckers and farmers and miners and so many other industries. And we're not going to stand down. It is absolutely time to remove the current political structure and build one that can be, that can domino across the entire world. And one that is evolutionary and serves the people, where the governing authority lays in the hands of the people. So I think it's going to be a really interesting next couple of weeks. But I do know that the Canadian government has caught wind of this. Now you're seeing, Pierre Poilievre come out and announce that he now wants to run for prime minister. I directly confronted him online with an ultimatum because I've had a lot of respect, as you know, for Pierre Poilievre over the years. I do believe that he is one of the most intelligent people within the de facto system. However, it's not time for us to be playing around anymore in a system that does not serve the people. So I directly confronted him online and I said, we will back you. We the people will back you. If you will sign a contract for constitutional conventions within the first 4 years and the complete removal of the crown. And then he came out and made his announcement that he was going to run for prime minister. So that's our answer. So unfortunately, Pierre Poilievre is going to be out of a job because the Canadians have decided that we're going to move forward. It is time for us to change the way that our political structure is built, and allocate all the powers, the governing powers, into the hands of the people where it belongs.
Yeah, along comes Pierre Poilievre, the new guy on the white horse, going to save Canada.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I know it is laughable. It's very laughable.
It is, but it's not. It is. Yeah. It's laughable, but it's not. You know.
Yeah. Well, what we do require is, sorry, honey. What we do require is 15% of any three provinces to sign the draft, or 38% of any one province. And we've got military coming on board on a daily basis from every single province that are willing to back us up, back the people up, and step in as an interim government should we meet these requirements.
Right. I think the timing is absolutely perfect right now for this kind of a movement, Kelly, because Canadians are waking up in droves and they're going to be looking for an answer. They're going to come to the realization that the system is broken. A lot of Canadians now are on journeys of discovery because of what's happened here in the last couple of weeks. I'm hearing it from people that they're looking into stuff that they never looked into before. You know, that happens when somebody wakes up, they start their journey.
That's right.
And that's what's happening right now. People are starting to look at simple little things that are brought to their attention via what's going on in our government and things that are going on around them. And all of a sudden, they're coming up with the same conclusion that it's really messed up. And, of course, the more they look, the more they find. So we're seeing right now an awakening in the Canadian people. If this continues, which I know it's going to, I don't think they can put this genie back in the bottle. But what you're talking about right now is a viable answer for people. People are going to be looking for an answer, and they're going to have something that they can grab and really run with and believe it's real and it's possible. And that's what you're presenting right now. So keep up the good work.
Thank you so much, Barry. So, somebody's ringing.
Yeah, it's four or five phone calls. I just turned my phone off here. But yeah, so
that'd probably be a good idea, Sally.
What's going on with the farmers?
Well, I know that the farmers across, well, I told you already that we have organized with farmers across Canada, and we are absolutely working on building a foundation for economic independence in Canada. So right now we're dealing with a few different international and indigenous hedge funds, and we're just trying to make sure that we get the correct funding in place in order to install the renewable energy resources that these farmers are going to need to take a monopoly over our power grid. So, this is going to provide so many jobs for Canadians. It's going to provide, you know, renewable energy resources that can't even be contested with anywhere in the world, that we can also, you know, sell internationally in order to bring forth, you know, more clean energy and our jobs, essentially. But all of these things that we're putting in place are going to be 100% free from Crown control. So, you know, and it's so very important. And they will, in the end, fund the new schools and fund the new clinics that we're also building. I mean, as you know, and your listeners know that Ezra Wellness has basically opened up, I don't know how many clinics now out west, but I'm working with Jenny May. She is the lead for Ezra Wellness for Ontario. And I'm also working with the Canadian Frontline Nurses and Indigenous Reserve Territories who are for to open these clinics on protected lands so that these women that and men that have all these frontline workers that have lost their jobs can be reemployed immediately. Right now in Windsor, Ontario and the surrounding areas, our frontline nurses have been seeing people at home for free that have been sick because there's such a, you know, there's such a disgusting thing happening within our healthcare institutions. Hospitals being paid between $13,000 and $33,000 for every COVID death, you know, which gives them incentives to ensure it happens, which is really bad. We've had people, you know, people's rights being overridden within the hospitals, people's rights of power of attorney being overridden, which is an absolute crime. You know, and we did a few protests outside of Windsor General Hospital where we actually went to the police station and filed complaints in order to put forth criminal charges on the hospital for overriding the power of attorney rights of this one family in which the mother had passed when she went in with a head injury and they misdiagnosed her as COVID and they put her on remdesivir, which she did not need. She needed stitched up. She died because of a reaction to it.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. And then the vaccine discrimination that is happening with hospitals, you know, two cases where people died out of neglect because they were literally pulled in. We have this on camera, you know, that they weren't being treated until every vaccine was first.
You're breaking up a lot, Joan.
Yeah,
you're breaking up really bad right now. Hard to understand. Yeah, maybe it's hard to understand anything you're saying right now. You're breaking up really bad. Did I lose it? Yeah. You just it's breaking up really, really bad, Kelly. Maybe you can move or don't know what to say.
Not even sure if she's still there.
Yeah, we're having trouble with her connection right now. Doesn't surprise me. Yeah, Kelly, we're not getting you at all. So.
Well, you could end it. You only got 5 minutes anyways.
Yeah, we're only 5 minutes away from the end of the show. If you can hear me, Kelly, I can't hear you or anything coming through your end now. So, yeah, she left.
She's gone, yep.
She's gone. Okay, well, folks, too bad we didn't get to hear her talk for a few more minutes. Whether they were messing with us or you just had a bad reception, we don't know. Nothing's beyond the realm of possibility in today's world, unfortunately. Thanks, guys, for coming in this week. It's been a pleasure. I hope that anybody listening today maybe took a little bit of information from what my guests had to say today. If you did, then it's a great day. Thanks again for joining me, and I'll be back next week, same time, same place. You guys all have a great week. God bless you. Bye for now.